Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Sarah Palin sound almost like Monica Lewinsky. I mean, don't they sound
they do.
Like they're in another decade? Well, they really were. They really were in another century.
Yes, absolutely.
They represented the 20th
century.
And they
can go back to it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, John McCain now. Did you hear his acceptance speech?
I watched it, and I watched Sarah Palin's face just quivering, and I thought, God, look at it. She just hates to lose so much.
Well,
we all hate to lose, but she really hates to lose.
She wanted to give her own acceptance speech. Or, no, I'm sorry, concession
she
speech.
She did?
Yeah. And they, you know, the McCain staffers by then were already
done with her.
Throwing her really under the bus, to use a cliche. He would have done better without her. I mean,
he really made a big mistake one.
But that's good. That's good.
That is good.
All right. Who identified the election of Barack Obama as a triumph?
Who? Oh, you know what? I know this one. Ding, ding, ding. George W. Bush.
Absolutely amazing. You know, I don't think he said anything bad about Obama during the entire election cycle. He didn't say much of anything, trying to keep out of the way with his 20% approval rating.
Oh, bad.
Yeah. Could you imagine if 80% of the listeners didn't like us?
Well,
we wouldn't have a job.
Right. There's a reason you've been here this long and that I've been here as long as I've been.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you think about all the reasons for the election of Barack Obama as president of the United States, the voters that put Bush in for a second term, I know you and I and a lot of our listeners think that Bush stole the election, but I still do. But let's put that off the table. But putting Bush back in there for a second term guaranteed the election of Barack Obama.
Sure did.
Yeah. Let's see. All right. Who said this? This is an historic moment. Barack Obama has been elected president. Let him savor this moment and not let the pettiness of internal workings of a campaign erode any of the recognition of this historic moment that we're in. And God bless Barack Obama and his beautiful family and the new administration we're in. It is time that we all pull together and work together, and America is going to reach her destiny.
Oh, that's so Sarah Palin.
Well, wait, what was happening? Well, let's get back to the John McCain.
He was palling around with terrorists. Now, God bless Obama.
Well, you take John McCain's concession speech, which was actually this model of decorum and everything imaginably positive, and then you look at the Sarah Palin statement, and you think, do they both have evil twins?
really.
That's about, by the way, this is a talk show. I'm Peter Werby, and Jalene Jordan is my co-host. And you can call us at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
We got a lot to talk about, and I'm not sure exactly how to frame it. Bad talk show host, no donut, or something like that. But what your thoughts in general, I've gotten so much email. Who is that? What is it? That one guy that wrote in? He said, "Now you've got your socialist America."
Oh right. I don't have it up.
Okay, and I wrote back, "Oh, that it would be so." You know?
Right.
So I want to talk about Barack Obama, how he's going to govern
with social programs.
Yeah. What?
Jeez.
Yeah. So
that whoever that was really was watching too much Fox TV.
Here is the problem that Barack Obama is going to face. If he doesn't discover a cure for cancer, people are going to be disappointed.
Yeah, he's got a lot.
People are beginning to name their children Barack.
Are they really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
that was
right on.
Well, I always say, wait. You know, one thing that I experienced. I'm always a little reticent about supporting any politician.
Yeah, for sure.
And suspicious. Maybe that's even a better word.
Cautious.
Cautious. So I really held back on every level, emotional. And if you look back over the months that we've been talking about this, dear listeners, I never
Wait.
Once...
Years.
Years, yeah. did come. I never once gave this big, huge pitch for Barack Obama. I knew that the re-election of George W. Bush in the form of John McCain and Sarah Palin would be absolutely awful for this country. Barack Obama gives us a chance, but only a chance. And we all have to make it so. When he gave his wonderful speech at Grant Park in Chicago, the night of the election, and he said, it's going to depend on all of you. I don't remember the exact words. In many ways, it probably just sounded like, you know, like the politician's cliches. You know,
that kind of did.
But I don't know how he meant it, but it's real, and it's got to be made real. I mean, right now, what's facing Barack Obama? He can either be Franklin Delano Roosevelt, or he can be Herbert Hoover.
Okay.
Yeah. Except this time, if Barack Obama does not work in a manner that fixes many of the problems of this country, or the big problems of this country, particularly the economy, our wars, and other things like that, I'm afraid what will follow, because the Hoover administration of 1928 to 1932, which saw the economy worsen and worsen and worsen, and the 1932 slogan for the Republicans were a chicken in every pot or something like that, right?
Okay.
Two cars in every garage. Mm-hmm. And, of course, things were getting worse and worse and worse, because like now, I mean, this is really like 1929. And if you remember, 1929 was the big stock market crash. But you know what? There wasn't the mass unemployment that typified the Depression in 1929. It began to grow because things began to cycle downward. And I think you know what's been happening. I mean, how, well, here. Regulators shut down Houston-based Franklin Bank and Security Pacific Bank in Los Angeles on Friday. Now, Franklin Bank, that has... what do they call those things? Branches in the Detroit area.
Yeah.
Bring the number of failures of federally insured banks this year to 19. Now, then they didn't have the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. But what's happening as people lose their jobs, as companies go out of business, as people say, whoa, I'm going to stop buying, and then that means more and more concerns shut down, more and more employees are laid off, that everything starts to spiral downward. So there is a nasty little pattern within capitalist society, which is prosperity, collapse or depression, and then war. Mm. So that's what's so frightening. And are the possibilities there? Well, if you read the newspaper, you know that it is there. Jobless rate bolts to a 14-year high of 6.5%. Ford Motors said Friday it lost $129 million in the third quarter. I thought I had General Motors, too, which
Also, in 240,000 jobs cut in October alone.
Yeah. Somewhere, though, and someone's keeping track of that. I don't have that in front of me either, called closings. And it's absolutely astounding how many stores are closing.
GM reports $2.5 billion.
Loss?
Third quarter loss.
Well, gee.
Says it's running out of cash, you think?
Yeah, yeah. So, let's see. I got a number of things here. Let me look through them. All right. The first and perhaps the most dangerous one is this. It says, Russia aims to be high on Obama's agenda. This is not like the medical marijuana that won in Michigan, 2-1. Thank you, Michigan voters,
yes.
For that one. Also, stem cell research was
yes.
approved and rolled back the religious right that had funded this with, I know you're not going to believe this, folks listening in other states.
Your money?
Yeah, no, that they were dishonest in the ads that they said against stem cell research.
Oh, completely. And
yeah.
They really hit it hard, too.
Yeah. To the extent that he focused on Russia at all, Barack Obama's attention was concentrated primarily on the need to keep Soviet nuclear weapons stockpiles out of the hands of terrorists. Good idea. But now President Dmitry Medvedev of Russia has thrown down a gauntlet intended to demonstrate to the American president-elect that the post-Cold War era may not be so post after all. You know, this Helene Cooper, who's writing from Washington, ought to be slapped. I'm telling you. I mean, the language that is, the inflammatory language, which is contained in that sentence. You know, I write for newspapers.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can pose anything. has thrown down a gauntlet. Here is what President Medvedev of Russia said. If you're going to bring an anti-missile system, which used to be part of a treaty that didn't allow that until the Bush gang broke it, up to our borders, I mean, hey, your country is 3,000-4,000 miles away from ours, and you just are bringing your anti-missile systems into eastern Poland? I mean, come on. That's not, we are throwing down the gauntlet to them. Let me put it another way, because that's not a correct use of language. The Bush gang has thrown down the gauntlet to Russia. And you know, that's what began the missile crisis in 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis. But I don't know, that will get me too far off. Let's see. While leaders around the world were falling over themselves to hail Mr. Obama's election, Mr. Medvedev delivered a harsh welcome to the new Cold War speech. A harsh welcome to the new Cold War speech in Moscow, putting anti-missile defense systems that are the property of a country 3,000 or 4,000 miles away on the border of another country. That's Cold War. Russia isn't doing anything. So the first thing that should be done is that to dismantle those immediately. They haven't even been constructed. Let's see. But wait a minute here. There is, this is George Friedman, a chief executive at Stratfor, a geopolitical risk analysis company, said, while Obama would like to deal sequentially with Iraq, Afghanistan, and when he gets to it, the Russians themselves want to be a burning issue at the top of his list. And well, it should be. And, you know, I was looking for something else that they were talking about, that Obama, gee, thought I had this. Are we on the air?
Oh, yeah, sorry. We're live.
Yeah, sorry. we can't edit this out. But in any event, somewhere in this article, it talks about Poland being a necessary part of U.S. strategic interests. Yeah? Why? I mean, for one thing, that just gives credit to President Medvedev's contention that this is a reinstitution of the Cold War. We have no business in Eastern Europe. We have no business in the Middle East. We have no business in Asia. This is the road to war. This is the road to continue the waste of hundreds of billions of dollars on warfare, where we need money for our country. It's all going down the rat hole of war preparation. So the first thing that ought to be done by President Obama is to say, no, we aren't. And the other thing is, part of this deal is with Poland is that we're, and I use that pronoun advisedly, we are going to modernize Poland's armed forces.
Mm.
We, you and me, friends, our tax dollars are going to modernize Poland's military. So because, of course, it's necessary for Poland to have a more modern, I don't know why. Why would they need a more modern military?
Because they think they need one.
Yeah, because every country wants one.
Right.
All right. 313-298-WRIF. Well, let's talk about the good stuff, though, for a while. You know, one of the things I missed, too, I mean, I knew this would be an important victory for people of African ancestry, although it certainly wasn't limited to that. When you saw these crowds all across the United States, these beautiful integrated crowds, everything that America should be, rather than these angry white people talking about terrorism and socialism and all of that, it neared and brought tears to my eyes. You know,
I cried.
Okay.
I cried before it even started.
A lot of people did. A lot of people did. And I don't know why I was surprised, because there has been so much formal integration into this society with, for instance, newscasters. But I was surprised and then realized I shouldn't have been when there was any number of African-American, pardon me, I'm not crying. I'm not choking up, I'm just choking. African-American commentators, you could hear their voices starting to break. Diana Lewis on Channel 7, you know, who, I mean, she may be listening. I mean, I don't think of her as a real emotional person. And I could just hear her breaking up.
She's a very, you know, newsy lady.
Yeah. I mean, talk about an old war horse. Jesse Jackson weeping.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Did you see Oprah? She was hanging on that guy's shoulder. Well, she had an election special. I only watched the beginning of it. And she goes, and that guy, I have no idea who he was. But that's a perfect example of what was going on around the country and the world.
Yeah, and around the world, our colleague Tom Hartman on his talk show on Wednesday, he asked people from other countries to call in to his show, which is based in Portland, Oregon. And his phone just filled up, and they were just, like, filled for the longest time, like an hour or something.
I heard a call from New Zealand. That's the only one that I heard.
I mean, people all over the world. I mean, I think it was even lost on those of us that despise George Bush and realize that this man is a war criminal who has destroyed the U.S. Constitution, harmed the environment, is responsible for this collapse of our economy. And yet the depth of hatred for this man and the atmosphere that he's created, not only in this country but around the world, suddenly was lifted like a huge weight.
Yeah, it felt good. You know, in fact, I almost didn't want to get out of bed the next day. I was so exhausted from thinking about how many years we've been sitting in front of these microphones or other microphones and, you know, completely angry, stressed out.
You remember, you know,
sad.
I said on the air, and remember, I told you after the show, I wasn't entirely kidding. I could not have stood another 4 years of doing radio if John McCain and Sarah Palin had been elected.
It would have been very taxing.
Yeah, and, and of course, we had any number of our friends saying they were going to move out of there, going to move to Canada.
Here.
Right. But now that we have this left-wing socialist Muslim
whatever,
maybe it's time for some of you right-wingers to think about immigrating. But I don't know where the hell you could go. Where could you go where there's a country where you'd feel comfortable? Saudi Arabia. Maybe. Iran.
Oh, sure.
Well, I mean, all you'd have to do is just sort of change your religion a little, and then you would have the same sort of repressive government that, you know.
Put your wife in a burqa.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Religion, you'd have the state and religion combined. You'd have a nice theocracy. One nation under God. Iran.
Right.
There you go. Like that. Or, I know, because you're going to say, you're just being snotty. You're a sore winner. Right? But how about Greenland? It's beginning, you know, because of, one of the things, Bush is absolutely...
It's melting.
Yeah, I know. So they could go there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you could be, like, sort of be like Alaska. You could, you could elect sort of a Sarah Palin type. Of course, that's not the U.S. But who knows? Remember Texas? Texas belonged to Mexico.
That's true.
And then it became like an independent state. Well, Bill Ayers, my buddy from Chicago, that's right, I also have palled around with this terrorist, Bill Ayers. In fact, I would say I have literally palled around with him significantly more than Barack Obama ever did, because Barack Obama never palled around with him.
He took a meeting, and there was a fundraiser.
Yeah.
That was it.
Bill and I and his wife, Brittany Dorn. Now, I want Bill Ayers to be the Secretary of Education. He is one
Can
of
Can you imagine? That is never going to happen.
Come on,
you
Barack, get some cojones. Do it. Bernadine Dorn, who's a lawyer, his wife should be appointed to the Supreme Court. Let me see. Who else could be? Paul Krugman, who is an award winner. When did he win? Did he just win a Pulitzer Prize? He didn't win a Nobel Prize, did he?
I don't know.
Someone tell us. He should be the Secretary of the Treasury. Although I'm afraid, or see, already I'm getting nervous about what's happened, because this appointment of Rahm Emanuel as his chief of staff, this guy is major center-right guy, Clinton war horse, Chicago guy. He really needs to move to the left. Barack Obama is not a leftist. There's absolutely nothing that identifies him with the left. But there has to be. Because only programs that are identified across Europe, for instance, with socialism, are going to get us out of this mess.
I think people are yelling at you yelling at their radios right now.
Well, you know, socialism has a deservedly bad name from the way it manifested itself in these peasant countries, like particularly China and the Soviet Union, but other places around the world. And so the state began to administer socialism as this police state, this authoritarian regime, usually having whack job leaders that made themselves a caricature of what Marx talked about, you know, workers' democracy. Instead, you had these ruthless dictators that were not only ruthless dictators, but they were absolutely crazy. I mean, it's sort of amazing that that almost every one of them turned out to be, you know, like nuts, yeah. Like Stalin and Mao and Ceausescu and
Kim Il Sung. Remember when you
yelled at the Maoist? Well, I yelled at in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You tore him a new one, and you know I usually see you as the other people hear you out here. You know, you're pretty reasonable. You don't get too worked up. Wow, he's got it in him, people. Believe me.
Yeah. Well. But the socialism that we're talking about, I mean, there's utopian socialism, which if you really pressed me, I would be all for that. But it's not nowhere on the agenda. In fact, realistic socialism of the type that we see in Europe, particularly in the northern tier Scandinavian countries, where the government takes the wealth of a nation and distributes it in a manner that doesn't let a third of its country live in poverty, that provides health care for everybody, that has clean streets, that has good schools. That's what it's all about. That doesn't have these absolutely these huge differentials of wealth and poverty, that doesn't have this sky high infant mortality rate. The government could do that by redistributing wealth. And you think, redistributing wealth? I'm using that really advisedly. Let me tell you about a little redistribution of wealth. It happens all the time. I use this example. I'll just do this quickly because I said this last week. If you're making $100 a week and you go to your boss and you say, I want a $5 raise, I want to make $105. And he says, yes, wealth just redistributed, right? He has $5 less, you have $5 more. So it happens all the time. Well, here's an ugly redistribution of wealth. It's when ExxonMobil has, again, record profits. They've looted the population way beyond the cost that they're actually incurring to have these excess profits. That's a major redistribution of wealth. Well, I'll tell you, if there has been any redistribution of wealth from the wealthy, now, I'm not talking about middle class, I'm not talking about working class, I'm not talking about poor. I'm talking about if there has been any redistribution downward since I don't know when. I mean, there has been in the past there's a legal minimum wage, when Social Security, that is a redistribution of wealth. And that's what was then, when unions were strong up through the 1950s and into the early 1960s. They could say, look, Mr. Employer, look, Mr. Corporation, you are not taking everything you can. We are going to organize, and we're going to say, we produce X amount of wealth, and we want a portion of that. Here's what we want, and we're going to bargain for it, and if you don't agree with us, we're going to go out and strike. All right? All of that is about redistribution of wealth. But since there's been this diminution of union power and this liberal ideal of that everyone should get a fair shake in this country, and it's dog-eat-dog, the Reaganomics, if you will, which of course also has caused the collapse of our economy here, all of the redistribution of wealth has only gone upwards. So the rich have gotten richer enormously and obscenely, and the middle class, the working class, the poor have only gotten poorer, or at best remain the same, but most of it, the statistics show downward. So what we need is a redistribution of wealth from the people that have accumulated these enormous fortunes and continue to have these obscene incomes on a yearly basis. Why should we do that? Well, I'll tell you, the only option is to go along as we are. I mean, what would happen? Like, for instance, when I'm always talking about, here's a redistribution of wealth, is that we have as my favorite little tax deal, we have a $50,000 tax deduction right off the top for everybody making under, well, what Barack Obama's figure, $250,000. And so that all being made up by the incomes above that. Well, that's a massive redistribution of wealth. I mean, you don't pay any tax on $50,000. And what do you pay? Like, say it's $20,000, or I'm sorry, 20%. So that means that you'd make another $10,000 a year. Well, what would you do with that? Some people might put it in the bank. Most people would spend it.
Pay off some bills, maybe.
Yeah. Would get it into the economy. The other thing that's necessary, and what's happening in China, who's also facing this, China is spending $500 billion on public works projects. This would put people back to work. Okay? I mean, so there's a whole host of things that that could happen in which no one would get hurt.
And all that people are worried about now, because pop culture is so much more popular than the, you know, the root of it all,
yeah,
is they're wondering, what kind of dog should he get for the kids? Boy.
Right. Well, just one more thing. I'd like to get your calls at 313-298-WRIF. By the way, I got lost, as I usually did, Bill Ayers, who was the attempt of the McCain-Palin campaign to use fear to get into office. They had no program, no solutions for anything that's happening. Bill Ayers has finally written, and I love it that he waited till afterwards. If you go to my website, it's there. Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. W-E-R-B-E.com. PeterWerbe.com. Bill Ayers speaks. It's called What a Long, Strange Trip It's Been. The words of?
Oh, it was that psychedelic dude.
Grateful Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Also,
I covered a lot of people with that one.
Here's something that will never happen, although I think if people would only do it, Bush and Cheney should resign right now and leave the presidency to Nancy Pelosi. They have ruined everything. They have destroyed our Constitution, ruined our economy, have assaulted our environment, have made absolutely everything worse, and right now they are doing everything imaginable to leave a legacy based on their greed and mismanagement and incompetency. That what there should be now, rather than celebrations for Barack Obama, tens of millions in the streets saying, Bush and Cheney, ass out now. Can I say that?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You can
good.
Say that.
Okay, good. And it says on my site, we can't wait until January 20th for new policies. The evil twins now occupying the White House can do immeasurably more damage between now and Obama's inauguration. And there's actually a link why we must force Bush Cheney to resign. 8 years of our national nightmare based on election theft, lies, war, and destroying the economy is over. But now Obama has to do something real to solve the mess he's inheriting. We need mass movements, and this is what's important. And that's what Obama was talking about in his speech. We just go, oh, good. We did our celebration. I talked to people that were up two nights celebrating.
Really?
Ann Arbor, people were marching through the campus till 3 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah. We need mass movements to demand an end to U.S. wars, full employment through public works programs, free universal health care, and other policies to benefit the vast majority of us and not the rich. And then I put, let's go to Washington on January 20th to demand programs for the people. And already, I guess, all the hotel rooms in Washington are almost sold
really?
Out.
I went to the last inauguration.
You did.
The counter-inaugural of Bush. It was one of the greatest times of my life to date.
Well, this time we ought to be saying congratulations, President Obama, but we need you to do dum, 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 dum. I mean, for
yeah.
us, for the people of the United States, for the vast majority of the people of the United States, but for the and for the world, but also for him. A failure of the Obama presidency, I just don't even know what to say. I mean, what could be? I really fear fascism could follow that.
Yeah.
Because what happened in 1928 to 1932 with the Republican administration of Herbert Hoover, then that was followed by a progressive administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. If you get a seemingly liberal administration of Barack Obama and that fails, what then? Sarah Palin and Joe the Plumber.
Oh, God. Then I really am out of here. You were asking about Paul Krugman. He did get the Nobel.
He got the Nobel. Yeah, I thought so, but I didn't.
That was from Cooper and Windsor. Thanks, Cooper.
Yeah.
Chris, I think is his name.
Yeah, I don't have everything here. But there was something about Joe the Plumber. Where the hell?
Here. I have it right here, Peter.
Okay.
Used to be on welfare. The perfect symbol for right-wing hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Did you want that?
And his, yeah, that was it. And his family was on his family was on welfare twice as well. Yep. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but here, this is the type of guy, I mean, the typical Republican hypocrite that's talking about, you know, taking money for the from the people that earn it, or that, well, they had some little phrase, the people taking from those that earn it and give it to those that don't.
Right.
Yeah, Joe. Well, Joe's 15 minutes is way up.
Bye-bye, Joe.
Here, this is Nut Jobs 2. In Denver, sales of handguns, rifles, and ammunition have surged in the last week, according to gun store owners around the nation who describe a wave of buyers concerned that an Obama administration will curtail their right to bear arms.
And that is not going to happen. You know, it's funny. One of our colleagues just went out and bought a Glock.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, brought it into the studio and showed me, right? Loaded, not loaded.
You know how quickly that could end in his termination?
Well, he talked about it on the air. So, you know, anyhow, but listen. He said that he went to the gun store.
Yeah.
And he said it was hopping.
Yeah, they're all
like
hopping.
Like mad.
Yeah. Jim Pruitt, owner of Pruitt's Guns and Ammo in Northwest Houston, which was packed with shoppers on Thursday, said he's a gun snatcher. So...
I don't get it.
If he's a gun snatcher, why would you buy guns?
Right.
They're going to be snatched.
Yeah.
These guys are idiots. He wants to take our guns from us and create a socialist society policed by his own police force, added Mr. Pruitt, a former radio personality. Well, no wonder. What an idiot. And so you think, why? Or maybe this guy's not so stupid because... What is clear is that every gun seller, this is from an article in the New York Times today, not to mention every advocacy group for gun ownership that depends on dues-paying members, has an incentive to stoke the concern that can prompt a gun sale. Political uncertainty, gun dealers say, is great for business. Rick Gray, owner of the Accuracy Gun Shop in Las Vegas, says Clinton was the best gun salesman the gun manufacturers ever had. Obama's going to be right up there with him.
He's going to surpass him, I think.
Yeah. You know, they're these real whack job right wingers. They have alcohol, tobacco, and firearms should be a convenience store. Not a department of the government. I mean, these guys are so crazy. I like that. That's a great combination. Alcohol and guns. That never causes any problems.
Right.
It?
And Sarah Palin, remember? No. One more dig on her. Just one more.
Oh, I gotta
when
believe.
She became mayor,
yeah.
She fought whoever was trying to get the guns out of the bars. She didn't care if the guns were in the bars. You know, alcohol.
Yeah. Guns and bars.
Yeah.
Well, come on. You got to settle some fights like a man.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
It's really manly to get drunk and shoot things up.
Yeah.
That's such a turn on.
wait a minute, though. We got one more thing about Sarah Palin. Have you people seen all of her whining now that the machine has eating its own? So all the Republicans are, you know, doing a number on her. Say she was so stupid.
McCain staffers
are
doing this.
Yeah. But did you see John?
And she said, they're jerks.
Yeah, they're jerks.
Then she didn't go to work. She called and said, I won't be in.
Did she?
She stayed in her Wasilla home.
And she had, did she have to give back her $650 Vuitton bag?
Oh, that's her bag. The bag is hers, but she has to give back the $150,000 worth of clothing.
Yeah. Right. Well, it turns out she spent a lot more. And she was getting, like, silk underwear for the first dude. And hey, did any of you give money to the Republicans? Well, you just bought some silk undies for the first dude. We'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Is your credit score holding you back? Are you paying more for everything just because you don't have perfect credit? Well, it's not your fault. Credit card companies are doing everything they can to keep you in debt and never let you escape. But I've got a system that can fix your credit score once and for all. And I'm going to send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system today.
My credit score is now 758. My wife and I are shouting for joy right now.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't just fix your credit score, it will permanently rebuild your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have.
Our credit score was in the low 600s, and now we're at 780.
You can wipe the slate clean once and for all. Call right now, and I'll rush you my free tape. For your free tape, call 1-800-900-8110. That's 1-800-900-8110. 1-800-900-8110.
What was that?
Oh, that? It's the sound of Motor City Steals and Deals, cutting prices on gift certificates to great Metro Detroit businesses.
I gotta see this.
The website is MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. They always have great deals, and every Monday they launch new ways to save. You can't beat it.
Enjoy homestyle cooking at Blaze and Bob's Barbecue. Experience the royal treatment at Salon Nadwa and Day Spa, or take a look into your future at the Boston Tea Room. Start saving now on these half price or more deals.
Sign up for Motor City Steals and Deals email updates at WRI.
It's been a long day and an even longer week. Heck, the last couple of months have felt more like an entire year. Maybe it's time to do something for yourself and finally take a vacation, because no one deserves it more than you. Funjet Vacations. Do something you'll never forget.
Now's the perfect time to treat yourself with a tropical getaway to an all-inclusive Barcelo resort. With nearly 20 resorts to choose from on some of the best beaches in Mexico, Costa Rica, and the Caribbean, you're sure to find a Barcelo resort perfect for your style and budget. And with Funjet's Your Vacation, Your Way sale, the right time to get the right price is right now, with savings of up to $500 per couple at select resorts for winter getaways nonstop from Detroit. Sale ends November 20th, so call your travel agent at 1-800-FUNJET-1 or go to funjet.com to learn more about Funjet's exceptional package rates.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much. Angeline Jordan is with me, as usual.
I am.
You are. 313-298-WRIF. And we didn't give the... our email address, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And our MySpace page is myspace.com/nightcallshow. We'll have a podcast up at wrif.com by noon. Jeremy, you hear that? and also we want to give a shout out to Debbie in Northampton, who's putting together a Facebook page for us.
Right. We took an all-new photo tonight.
Boy, are we good looking.
We are good looking. I decided to not wear my pajamas to do the show tonight.
that's good, yeah. I combed my hair.
Right, yeah. We really did it up tonight.
Oh, I forgot her name. My wife and I, we were in English Gardens out on Coolidge, just north of 14 Mile. Mm-hmm. And I asked a clerk about something, and she said, "Are you Peter Werby?"
How did she know?
My voice.
You're kidding me.
And I'll tell you, as we were going out, my wife said to me, "You look like a bum." And I mean, my hair, I don't know. I don't even think I need a haircut, but by most standards, I would, people would say I need a haircut. I was wearing Levi's with a hole in the knee, and
a part of that band that my friend is in now, the Long-Haired Freaks. Right?
Really?
The way you look.
That's
right?
Good.
Yeah.
You know, did you read the Frank Rich column in the New York Times today?
I did read it today.
He was saying that the reason probably a lot of this awful, evil, lying stuff put out by McCain and Palin didn't work is particularly among young people. This stuff, they probably thought that the Hanoi Hilton was just part of the Hilton chain. You know, they thought the Weather Underground, that they said that Bill Ayers
it's raining men.
Yeah. Oh, but that wasn't all funny, because why can't I find anything tonight? The Secret Service said
too much. That's why.
Did you get that one? The Secret Service said that the rhetoric that Sarah Palin used about palling around with terrorists and all that. Do you have that there?
I have it somewhere here.
Yeah, why do we? We got too much stuff.
Well, it really is.
Actually, has led to this massive uptick in threats against Barack Obama.
And now there's all these impeach Obama groups that are popping up on Facebook.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we've been calling for the impeachment of George Bush for a long time, so I guess,
Yeah. Yeah.
And that leads me to an email that we got from Winston Smith.
Yeah, Winston Smith.
Yeah.
The same guy that was in 1984?
I think he might be a different one.
Oh, okay.
Peter and Julian, I'm very apprehensive about the possibility that Obama might cozy up to Bush and try to deflect any efforts to prosecute which is critically important, because if this cabal of criminals are allowed to walk away laughing, they will be back, emboldened.
Well, don't you think that Bush is going to, just like his dad did in 92, on the way out, he pardoned all these criminals from his administration, and I'm sure that that so will... so will George Bush. In fact, some people have said he probably will even pardon himself, right?
Oh, he would be so bold.
Wouldn't he? All right, let's do something really strange on this phone-in talk show. Let's take some phone calls. Yeah, all right.
Only 41 minutes in, Peter.
Yeah, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And here's Jeremy in Saline Township. Jeremy, hi. It's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air on WRIF with us.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing excellent.
All right, very good. You guys were talking about how we're how the U.S. Strategically places themselves, you know, in Poland, Eastern Poland, and things like that. They've been doing that for years and years and years.
Well, they haven't been putting anti-missile systems there.
No, but they've been violating the same kind of laws in every other place but our own country for years and years and years.
Okay.
What I was wondering is, you said a couple things about Obama, too. What is he going to do with the gun restriction kind of laws? I didn't follow a whole lot of that of it.
Well, he hasn't said anything. I think he realizes that that, first off, would be so unpopular. But, you know, there are a number of loopholes. Like, for instance, the assault weapon ban. I mean, you know, I'm a gun owner, and I don't feel restricted by the fact that you wouldn't be able to own assault weapons. Why in the hell does anybody want that? You know, if you want home defense, there's a lot better weaponry for that if you're concerned about that aspect of security. If you're a hunter, you know, you're not going to go after deer or rabbits or chipmunks with an assault rifle.
Very true.
So, you know, listen, 99% of gun owners are extraordinarily responsible. I mean, we have a country that could conceivably have more guns in it than people. And but that 1%, you know, does a lot of damage. And I don't, there's no way in the world that you could confiscate any number of guns. The American people, I don't think, would tolerate it. And it's certainly not on Barack Obama's agenda. We haven't heard anything about that. I mean, he supports laws they are sensible laws having to do with gun ownership and registration and what have you. They're dangerous instruments. I mean, just like, if you don't want any restrictions on them, I'm not saying you, Jeremy, but it would be like saying, we don't want any restrictions on automobiles because automobiles are, you know, like I'm an automobile enthusiast. So, you know, nobody should be licensed and there shouldn't be any speed limits and, you know, there can't be any pollution controls and all that. So one of the things we don't have to worry about with Barack Obama is setting up a socialist state that's going to confiscate guns. We're safe from that. All right, thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate that so much. Here is Alex in Maryville. Hi, you're on the air. Yep, wait a minute, sorry, you're not. But Marysville is, isn't that where the ferry lands from Sombra, Ontario?
No, it's St. Clair County.
St. Clair County. Oh, come
yes.
on. What's, no, it's a town, though.
Where? Yeah.
There's an auto ferry from Ontario across the St. Clair River. Doesn't land in Marysville?
I don't think so.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, what I read in the New York Times was that a man tried to say that in the national anthem that it was practically religiously unright because it says under God.
I think you mean the national anthem.
That's what he said.
I'm sorry, the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not the national
right.
anthem.
Right,
yeah.
Which was added in the 50s.
50s.
By the Knights of Columbus? Or?
Yeah, it was by these right-wing Republicans who were afraid that people would confuse us with godless communism unless they inserted that. Yeah. So what do you think?
Well, I think that's just absurd. If he said that students should not have to put their hands above their hearts if they didn't feel like it,
who's he? Who's he we're talking about?
I don't remember his name.
Oh. I mean, somebody
someone
write
in the Times.
Someone in the New York Times said they should. Well, I don't think so either. I don't think anybody should be forced to do any sort of religious or civic recognition unless they choose. We're not we're not harmed by that, right? Eh?
Yeah. He still brought that up, and I think it almost got to the Supreme Court where he said that it should be taken out of the national anthem.
Oh, was that guy in California?
Yeah, the Pledge of Allegiance. There was a lawsuit against it that said this is a commingling of church and state to add that. The Pledge of Allegiance was actually comprised by a minister. Who could very well have put that in under God, since he was a man of the cloth, as they say, yet chose not to. And although he, I hate to say it, folks, he was a Christian socialist. His name, I can't remember his first name, but his name was Bellamy. And his Frank or John or Al or...
Or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, one of the many names that men have. But his, and someone, I don't know why I'm not focusing, but there's actually.
It's Francis Bellamy.
Francis Bellamy. No, that's who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yeah.
And his brother was, does it say who it was there, wrote this utopian novel, I think called Looking Backwards. And so it was this utopian, this novel that looked at the chaos of the 1890s in the United States and said we can have a perfect society. All right, well,
His brother was Edward.
Edward Bellamy, right, okay.
Yeah.
Looking backward. I don't know how that would read today. But, Alex, in any event, that suit, I think, may still be in the works, although what happens is judges will say this is not religious but sort of just civic and traditional and what have you. But to me, the Founding Fathers, when they said Congress shall make no law establishing religion, to put under God in the pledge certainly does that. Establishes religion, and I will never say it, to be quite blunt. All right. Thank you. Put in there by right-wing Republicans. Let's see here. Why are people falling off here? Have a little patience. 313-298. WRIF, here is Chris. Chris is in, what's the town here? You're in Almont?
Almont, Michigan.
Almont, Michigan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Back to the economy and the $700 billion bailout package. It's absurd that the government is going to bail out these companies that have horribly mismanaged these funds, horrible loans, mortgages. It's just disgusting. Maybe I'm just uneducated on this, but why, honestly, can we not give every legal U.S. tax-paying citizen $1 million?
Well, we could.
$1 million.
Yeah, all it takes is Congress willing to pass that. I mean, come on, you're being a little crazy.
That's crazier than Peter.
How about just 50? How about just 50,000? 50,000.
What would happen with that money? You would pay off your house,
right?
You'd go buy a new car. Maybe put your kids into college.
Sure.
Immediately the money would be put right back into the system. All these financial institutions that are so destitute, they would suddenly have all their money. Everybody be able to pay their loans. Yeah, inflation may go up. But seriously, what would be the ultimate detriment of...
How about we take our money and run? I would probably move to Paris.
I can't think of a thing wrong with that. I mean, that's the kind of stimulus package that makes plenty of sense. One of the things that's been established, and I don't know why I can't find so many different things that I printed out.
What do you need now?
Well, this the idea that of the $750 billion, pardon me, of our tax dollars, that billions of it have been set aside by these companies for a bonus fund for their executives.
Yes.
I mean, can you imagine that?
I work for an automaker.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's disgusting that, once again, I see it as mismanagement of funds, executives getting huge bonuses, wasting money on jets and trips. But now the government, of course, again, they're going to bail them out and save everything, and it's sick. It's just sickening.
Well, let me ask you a very obvious question. Why don't you take your paycheck every single Friday or whenever you get it and go to a casino and gamble it all and take the risk of losing it all? Because you figure you got pretty good chance to lose it all and you would be screwed economically, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But you know what? Because there's a penalty for mistakes that you would make in the utilization of the money that you command. But these guys, they pay no penalty, right?
That's a one, yes. That's a one-way street. Yeah. That doesn't apply to the upper echelon. As you referred to earlier, the rich get rich. The middle class is, well, Bush, the goal for the Bush decade almost was to destroy the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
They just hate us. I don't know. They don't understand that we run the economy. Without my job with that automaker making a very decent wage, I put money back into the economy. We're the ones buying houses and buying cars and going out to dinner and hockey games and football games, and not everyone has that luxury. It is nice, don't get me wrong, but without these automaker jobs, this state's going to be a ghost town in 5 years.
Well, I'm fearful about that as well. And so one of the things, I mean, once these corporations are done looting, then they turn to the next phase of it, which is blackmail, which they say, if you don't give us the money, everything's going to go down the drain. So we figure, well, yeah, we got to give it to them no matter what, no matter how badly they've screwed us, no matter how badly they've screwed up. We'll say, okay, they can get it together. Well, you know, one thing that Barack Obama has done before he even won was he lowered the gas prices by 100%. In other words, it was up to $4.40. I got gas today for $1.98.
Wow.
And that was because his Bush's buddies in the oil industry said, you know, we've got to knock this down. Because if gasoline would have been $4.40 a gallon on November 4th, the Barack Obama probably would have won every single state, right?
Yeah,
that would have been
point.
The major issue. Chris, thank you so much for calling 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here is Dawn. Dawn's in Oakland Township. Hi, Dawn. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I just took offense to you saying that if Barack Obama, because he's president now,
mm-hmm.
Gas prices went down, because that is like total misconception, because Barack Obama had nothing to do with it. That was completely OPEC, because gas surged and prices went down.
I didn't say that Barack Obama had anything to do with it directly. I said it was Bush's buddies in the oil industry that control the refinery. It's not about, you know, how much oil is in the pipeline or how much OPEC is pumping. The reason that ExxonMobil has made so much money is they restricted production. They restricted refining it so that they knew they could drive the price up and up and up. And they wanted to see what would Dawn in Oakland Township do? What would Peter do? What would Jolene do? Well, essentially, we didn't do anything except bitch about it. Well, so they just kept looting us, for gouging us for billions and billions of dollars, so that they made more money off of us than any company has ever made. Well, they're willing to let this go as an investment. But guess what, Dawn? I'll bet you this gasoline is going to go way, way up, and it doesn't have anything to do with the world recession.
No, I did not say that.
Say
did
what?
I?
What? Say what?
You just, like, berated me before I even got a chance to talk.
Well, let's do this. You hang on, because we have to do these commercials before midnight, and we'll get right back to you, and then we'll try to figure out what each of us is saying. Peter Werby and Julian Jordan, this is Night Call. It's 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Most WRIF contests are open to legal U.S. residents at least 18 years old. Winners may win only one contest every 30 days or every 6 months for prizes worth $600 or more. Employees and their family of Greater Media Detroit, its advertising agencies, and other radio stations in the metro area may not participate. No purchase necessary. Prizes are not transferable, and rules are subject to change at any time. Complete rules are available online at WRIF.com or at the WRIF studios during regular business hours.
Everything that rocks.
Home
of WRIF.com. Get the latest rock news, concert listings, and where Riff is rocking the streets. Check out Motor City's Deals and Deals and get stuff for half price. Or hear 101 The Riff online from anywhere in the world.
Website
worldwide. 101 WRIF and WRIF.com. Everything rocks.
What could be the biggest financial setback of your life? It's not losing a bet or making a bad investment. It's bankruptcy. And if you have too much credit card debt, you may be closer than you ever imagined. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call an advocate who understands debt problems and how to fix them. Your advocate is Debt Settlement USA. Call for a free consultation at 1-877-560-8877. Debt Settlement USA has a proven debt reduction program that can cut the amount you owe and get you out of debt faster than you could on your own. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. 1-877-560-8877. Your call is confidential with no obligation. Not available in all states. Debt Settlement USA can help you get out of debt faster than you think. Call now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
If you own a business, you know incorporating can be a smart way to protect yourself and your assets. So the question is, why haven't you incorporated your business yet?
My business? It's too small.
Wrong. No matter how small your business, you run the risk of losing all your personal assets, your car, your home, even your entire life savings if you're not incorporated.
Incorporating is very complicated.
Actually, incorporating is easy and fast. You can do it in just 10 minutes. Call now for your free guide from the company corporation. 1-800-331-1461.
I need a lawyer to incorporate. That's really expensive.
You don't need a lawyer, and we don't offer legal or financial advice. The only mission of the company corporation is helping people like you incorporate safely, easily, and quickly. Find out how simple it is to protect your family and personal assets by incorporating. Call now for your free guide. 1-800-331-1461. 1-800-331-1461. That's 1-800-331-1461.
101 WRIF in WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much and welcome back. Hi, Jalene Jordan.
Hello, Peter.
We are here for one more hour at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. You do the math if you're elsewhere in the country or the world. I'll be interviewing, what should we do first? Ishmael Ahmed, who is the director of the Michigan Department of Human Services, and he has put together, this is an amazing man, absolutely amazing. He has initiated something called the Voices for Action Poverty Summit, and he's the director, director of the Michigan Department of Human Services that does like food stamps and all that.
The Bridge Card, which we participated in.
Well, you did.
You didn't
I never
do it?
Cashed mine. And yeah, we were supposed to live on food stamps
for a week.
He did. His wife did. Governor Granholm did. Yeah. We never really talked about this, but the Poverty Summit is being held Thursday, November 13th at Cobo Hall. And everyone is invited. There is a registration fee, but it's about action. It's about taking what's happening to our state and beginning to deal with it. Also, Ron Aronson, who is the author of Living Without God, New Directions for Atheists, Agnostics, Secularists, and the Undecided. That's all at 1 a.m. Also, if you go to my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com, you can see what Jalene and I do in our off hours as rock and roll DJs.
Yes.
That's good. And I got to leave it a little vague. You'll see when you get there why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's go back to Dawn. Dawn is in Oakland Township, and we were talking about, I contended that the price of gasoline was driven down purposely by Bush's buddies so that we wouldn't be looking, pardon me, at $4.40 a gallon. Had $4.40 a gallon been what the price of gasoline was, that probably Sarah Palin and who's the guy she was running with?
McCain,
yeah. They wouldn't have won a single state. All right, Dawn, what say you?
What say
me? What do you say?
What do you say? That's another way to say it.
I think that it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Like,
what?
McCain and Palin have nothing to do with gas prices.
No, I know, but Bush
don't have anything to do with OPEC.
No, I know. But here's the deal. The oil companies did not want Barack Obama. I mean, the stock market fell because they realized, wait a minute, they're not going to get the runaway, non-regulatory gift that this Bush racket gave them over 8 years. So they went, oh, we're going to probably make less profits, which I hope is the case. I hope we, the middle class and the working class, are the ones that wind up with the money. That the money that they've been screwing us out of for so long winds up in our pockets, not in theirs. Good idea?
Okay, so you're saying that that had to do with the Republicans, Congress, and White House, which that already fell down with a Republican White House Congress. But the gas prices are falling down and falling down and falling down because the stock market is plummeting, and so is gold and silver and gas. So how do you, like, blame that for gas being regulated and actually, like, the whole entire stock market finally a regulatory, correction on a Republican or Democrat House? Because Barack Obama is the president-elect.
Yeah.
And there is a Democratic House that is elect, and gas prices are still plummeting. Don't you think that it is absolutely just a correction in the market?
Well, no. We've gone around with that. But you made your point well. Thank you, Dawn. Appreciate your comments. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here is Don. Don's in Roseville. Thanks for joining us on WRIF. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to add a little something to the Pledge of Allegiance thing the guy was talking about.
Wait a minute, Don. There's something.
In a bathroom?
Yeah, you sound like you're in a bathroom or something.
Actually, I'm in a hallway.
Oh.
A very long hallway.
Okay. Yeah.
How's that?
That's a lot better. Yeah.
Okay. I don't understand what this lawsuit's about because it's the law, like, since World War II, that you don't have to say the Pledge of Allegiance, and if you do say it, you don't have to say Under God. We were told that when I was a kid back in the 60s.
Right.
I don't understand what this law is about. If you don't want to say it, you don't have to say it.
Yeah,
if you don't want to say Under God, you don't say Under God.
That's true. You know,
I don't understand what the lawsuit's about when it's actually the law that you don't even have to say it at all if you don't want to.
I think he just didn't even want his kid subjected to it.
Yeah, that you're kind of a pariah, an outsider. I mean, why are you so weird that you're not saying the pledge or that you're going, I pledge allegiance to...
Yeah, and he's saying if they would drop it from that, then all the kids who are probably of many different faiths in his child's classroom would all feel... more comfortable as well they should.
Yeah. It doesn't belong in there. It wasn't there at its origins, and it was put in it for bad reasons, and it does at least suggest a violation of the First Amendment, the first thing in the First Amendment that Congress shall make no law establishing a religion. But I hear you. Yeah, I mean, that's what, like, I don't say it.
I don't say it.
Yeah. Thank you. Of course, I can't remember the last time I was anywhere where people said the Pledge of Allegiance.
I know. That's a good point.
Yeah. There's some place or other where, I mean, these...
Oh, you know where I was the last time I did when I was substitute teaching?
Yeah.
Really? In this area.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, no. I'm not going to start any craziness here. But
yeah. Don't do that. Right.
No.
313-298-WRIF. It's Jim in Brighton. Hi, Jim. You're on the air with Peter and Jolene.
Hey, how you doing, my fellow Americans?
Good.
Hello.
Good, Jim.
I just wanted to know if you guys heard anything about, one of my buddies told me about it, and then I looked on the internet and found out that it was true, that Obama has taken out the, bowling alley out of the White House and built a basketball court. Have you guys heard about that?
Yeah. He does play basketball.
Yeah, he does.
He is a horrible bowler, and, does that bother you?
That is just if you became president, wouldn't you want to, I don't know, bowl on the same bowling alley as all the previous presidents?
Is there a bowling alley in the White House?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, if you think of how many?
I'd rather have like a rock room. Or
How many lanes are there at the White House bowling alley? One or more?
I don't know. I wanted to find that out too.
Well, I think it's pretty big.
Probably, yeah, but it's like the Henry Ford mansion, he had one too, and I think it was like three lanes or something.
Mm-hmm. It's not exactly the configuration of a basketball court, so.
Right.
Yeah. I suspect.
Well, since we're on that that whole track, what kind of dog do you think they should get?
I don't know. He said he wants to get a mutt like himself.
Yeah,
I agree.
There you go. Yeah, I think they're going to rescue something. Yeah. But I
thank
just,
you, Jim.
It's
I doubt if he's going to take that up. a mutt. You know, that gets back. We were talking about how the emotions expressed by people of African origin about, this finally said, and actually we ought to get to this aspect too, that finally said, yes, we can. You can do anything in America, even if you're a person of color. And, I don't want to take anything away from the exultation felt by, African Americans, but, you know, he's mixed race. He's equally white and black. And to some, only in a racist country can you be half white and half black and be considered 100% black, right? I mean, how could that possibly be? I mean, if you were, I know a bunch of people that are actually half, a whole family that's half Irish and half Lebanese, and another, and another family that's half Mexican and half Irish. So are they Mexican? Or are they Irish?
Good
well, they're
point.
Not. They're mixed. They're a Mexican-Irish family.
Do they like Jameson or do they like tequila? I don't know.
Whereas, what would you say about them? They'd say, oh, they're this Irish-Mexican family or this Mexican-Irish family or this Lebanese-Irish family.
Right.
Like that. I mean, so you'd have to say about Barack Obama, he's this he has this white-black family, and we've seen them both, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's mixed race. I guess the reality is, in America, he is, in fact, I heard somebody once identify themselves as, he said, I'm 40% white, 20% Choctaw Indian, something else, and he said, and 30% African American, in other words, 100% black.
I don't know. I had this angry Republican yell at me once. He's black. I don't care what you say. And I thought, God,
well,
get a grip.
Just like if he was a Muslim, there's anything wrong with that. The same thing. I mean, if you consider yourself or you are, in fact, 100% African man, you know, so what?
Yes.
I mean,
when can we let go of these labels?
Well, a third of this country and a third of every modern industrial country is pure fascist, right? So they would vote for Hitler or Mussolini or, you know, anybody that came along and that had all of those qualities of fascism, racism, militarism, adoration of the political state and its war powers and all. But then this time there was also probably another 20% that were just so fearful of what something different would be. Like this country, we're used to having, worms in running things, and McCain fit the bill, white old rich man.
Oh, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We have an abundance of them.
Things were in the pooper. There's usually another word.
Yes. Yeah.
They were still too fearful to say, we've got to try something different. And I'm not trying to sell anybody that, that this is all going to work out well. Because one of the things that happens when a city starts to, collapse economically, when like Detroit began its deindustrialization, if you listen to a lot of nitwits in the suburbs around here, they say, Coleman Young ruined Detroit. And for those of you who, it's ancient history or live in other parts of the city, Coleman Young was elected mayor, I believe, in 1973. Well, the deindustrialization of Detroit began in the 50s when companies said, boy, we don't want to pay working Americans, working Detroiters, a decent wage that has been won through sweat and literally blood through the union movement. They didn't go to China. They didn't even go to Mexico. They went to the south of the United States where they knew there were non-union shops, where they could pay people crap wages, no benefits, no health plan, no retirement, nothing. Not like the unions had won from the big companies. So the deindustrialization of Detroit began 50 years ago, that transformation. And when the city was really ruined, we'll have a black mayor. Well, people, Andrew Young, who was the ambassador to the United Nations, already said that. He says, you know, as soon as things start going terribly wrong, he said, they'll bring in one of us. We can say, well, we didn't do it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was that one, as McCain said.
He ruined it, right.
He ruined it. Everything was going great till he got in, right?
Hey, well, how about this?
Till one of them got in.
Right, till one of them ruined it all. Did you hear about this great Republican hope? Did you read about this Bobby Jindal? The 37-year-old Indian-American governor of Louisiana. And this is, there's speculation that he's the next GOP, you know, superstar.
Suddenly we'll have these thin presidents. There was an article in the New York Times that said...
Well, Daniel was in shape, wasn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't thin, though. He was, now he looks terrible.
In fact, I was watching television with someone the other day who said, is that Bush?
Yeah. He looks like he's aged 20 years. He's, you know, used to have this very erect, almost like stick up his butt posture, which is good. Should have erect posture.
Yes.
Now is like his head's forward and it's like his collar doesn't meet the back of his neck.
He's a broken man.
He should be.
Not broken enough to ruin a few more things before he gets the hell out.
He and Cheney should resign. Let Nancy Pelosi be the president as constitutionally dictated, and begin the Barack Obama reconstruction plan. You say, what reconstruction plan? Well, you better get one quick.
He's working on it.
He is working on it.
He's on it.
And he's going to start, as people have said, with these executive orders to try to undo all.
Name it.
But he's going to have to try because the enormous damage done to our country by this racket posing as a government, Bush-Cheney, is nothing you could do overnight in any event.
Like I was saying before the show, I said, I just hope he goes through and just knocks him down, you know?
Yeah. Well, one of the things, of course, that was sad about it all is that California voters adopted a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. That's after about 18,000 loving couples who wanted to be recognized as full human beings in our society by their fellow citizens were told, shove it, at least by 52% of the voters in California. Very disturbing, and it won in number of other states, and another vindictiveness in Arkansas that they passed I don't know whether it's a law or an amendment saying that unmarried couples could not adopt children. There is such an overflow of children in foster homes, and they've made it harder to adopt kids.
Yeah.
They'd say, oh, we don't want it by just Jim and Jane living together. We want them to stay in foster homes. We don't want, Jim and John adopting, which was really what it was all about, anyone.
Scares them so much.
Yeah. We want to have a good heterosexual couple, one that got drunk and got married at a drive-in facility
Las
Vegas.
I did that.
That's right, you did.
I didn't drive through, but I did go to the Little White Chapel.
In Vegas.
Yeah. I took it very seriously, which is why I'm divorced.
You know, we could... I don't think we could do a radio show about you, but we could definitely do a TV show about you.
I think
sort of
so,
like,
too.
You know, one of those desperate housewives things. Except you're not desperate.
I was never desperate.
What is really...
Still not.
Understandable, if that's a word, is that the exit poll data for Proposition 8 in California, which said that overturned the California Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage, and which now rewrites the state constitution, that 70% of black voters and half of Latino voters backed this. Now,
a religious thing?
I think a lot of it was, but you know what? During slavery, black people could not marry.
And now they're against other people marrying.
They were not full human. They were not full human beings. Slaves were counted in the Constitution as 3/5 of a human being. That every insult imaginable was heaped upon Africans brought here against their will. I mean, it's been an unhappy sojourn in Babylon here. And things are starting to turn around, and why people with that kind of history that still means so much to them, you can see the outpouring of emotion in California would do that. Same thing happened in Michigan when we disgraced ourselves by putting a ban on same-sex marriages in our Constitution in 2004. Kerry won the election in Michigan, so it was obvious that it was Democrats that voted against or voted for a ban on gay marriages. And what's happening with the 18,000 couples that have married same-sex couples?
Well, we were looking at the article that the Schwarzenegger,
the governor,
said he feels that those people are going to be unaffected by this. So I don't really know what that means.
No leadership on his part, and unfortunately, none on the part of Barack Obama, too. I mean, I've heard people say, in fact, I was listening to this liberal talk network, and they were saying this is one of the Republican wedge issues that gets people thinking about, you know what they do? It makes me sick. Rather than thinking about your economic interests or the fact that we're still involved in these wars or the fact that...
Or the fact that they are genetically born this way.
Well, you know, I heard somebody's... I just heard these
I believe.
Two gay men today. He says, doesn't matter. So what if you choose
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's true, Peter.
You know, yeah.
That's really true.
It ain't nobody's business except the people involved.
Yes.
And, one of the things, remember we've asked any number of times... I don't understand, you being divorced, me being longtime married, how this would harm traditional marriage. These people are, I don't know, I could go off on one of my...
I think it's about money and insurance and benefits and all of that. Well, and the things they do in the bedroom.
But usually most Americans say, as long as you're not hurting anybody... It's okay. So why isn't this okay? It ain't hurting you. It's not even your business to think about what, quote, they do. Of course, guys, you like to think about what two women do.
That's okay.
You just don't like to think about what two guys do. So just think about the women. I saw, I've been more emotional than usual lately. There was this, I actually didn't bring it. I was afraid I was going to, a photograph from the New York Times, I was afraid I was going to tear up talking about it. And if I see myself coming close, I'm not even going to finish. But it was two women in a San Francisco City Hall hallway that were walking, and it showed them from behind, their arms around one another, and both their heads were drooping, and it had said who they were, and it said they leaving City Hall after being denied a marriage license. Mm. Here are these two loving people, which we're supposed to be beyond gender, right? Is that you don't say, oh, you can't do that. You can't be the vice president because you're a woman. Who would say that to Sarah Palin? You know, no one would say you can't come in here because you have a dark skin. No one would say you can't come to our college because you're Jewish. You know, no, that's gone. But somehow full rights, full human respect is being denied from people that are all around us, our neighbors, our family. I mean, of those 70% of the 50, let's not put it off on any one group. Of those 52% of people in California that voted to establish a ban on same-sex marriage, did none of them know anybody that was gay? Was there nobody gay in their family?
This is California.
Hello. Right. And yet they were willing to deliver this insult to someone's humanhood to establish it in the document that defines law in the state of California.
I would suggest to anyone who's interested to go to YouTube and put in San Diego mayor and gay marriage. He gave this speech that was so heart-wrenching, Peter. I don't even know if you could take it. I was bawling my eyes out. And he was against it at one point. And he came through. It was really hard for him to give the speech. You just have to go watch it because it turns out, well, he's got a connection to it.
Huh.
And that's called a tease in radio.
Okay. Here's Kyle in Roseville. Kyle, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Peter and Jalene with you on WRIF. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to call and talk to you a little bit about what that Don called in about gas prices.
Uh-huh.
I agree with you to a certain point. I think because of election, but you know, the administration and his buddies were kind of hiking it down and stuff. But to a certain point, because I think a lot of it was, I mean, when you look at the percentages of people that really stopped filling their tanks and traveling over the summer and things of that nature, I think that made OPEC and a lot of these oil companies realize that they're only going to push us to a certain point, and then after that, we're not going to pay over $4, and if we do, it's to get to work and back, or mm-hmm. you know, we're not going to travel as much as we do.
Well, I hear you, but you know, it's not all about filling up our tanks. And yeah, for instance, the United States, I think the largest consumer of gasoline is the United States military. I don't think it cut back at all. How much driving did diminish. That's without a doubt. But it didn't, you know, it wasn't like it was cut in half or cut via, I forgot what the statistics were. But again, all of that can be manipulated through the refinery process and not how much, not at the wellhead. So, so I don't entirely disagree with you. Some of it, if there actually was a free market, which there's not, it would have come down some. But man, this dropped unbelievably, didn't it?
Oh, it did. It did. I agree. And the thing that's weird now is I haven't really seen it drop anymore. It's kind of at a standstill now that I've noticed for maybe a week or two now. So, you know, I don't know what to expect. I'm thinking it's going to shoot back up again. But
well, I suspect. What's the lowest you've seen? I think I've seen like 198.
196, actually.
Really?
Yep. Right in Roseville here.
I'll have to travel over there tomorrow. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Yeah, guys, you can rev up those Hummers again. Yeah,
I've heard people saying that they want to just get everything, every gas can they can, and fill it up right now.
Well, of course,
in their shed.
GM's going to stop and Ford's going to stop building those big 150s and all those big trucks. And but now they think, wait a minute, now it's okay again. But we shall see, I guess. All right. Let's see here. Where are we at? Let's see. Let's take it to Robin Taylor. Hi, Rob. It's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I had a comment about what you said earlier about Obama and the Spanish family and the Irish family.
Yeah.
And not understanding correctly on that. Well, when I was in high school, my father is a black man.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's Irish.
Mm-hmm.
But my father is 50% Irish. I'm very light. I'm very blonde.
Mm-hmm.
But in high school, I was legally African-American and in junior high. Because if you're 17% ethnic, you are that ethnic race.
Weird.
That's what they did in junior high and high school to me.
Wow.
So
and how did that
put that out there.
How did that go for you?
Taught me a lot of black girls.
Yeah.
They loved me. But it was embarrassing. If I'd be transferred out of one class to another, they would be like, I was expecting a good-looking black guy. But
well,
I just got good-looking.
You know, there's a concept. I don't know that it still has any bearing, but it all the way, you know, through slavery when the slave masters began having sex with women, you know, like Jefferson did and what have you. And through the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, there was this concept of passing for white. So, I mean, which is so bizarre. In other words, if somebody looks white, whatever the hell that means, aren't they? You know? I mean, that's so crazy. On the other hand, we should be proud of all of our ancestry and the fact that people wanted to hide it and not have those negatives that were attached to African ancestry, even if there was like 1%, and then they were passing for white. And there was a movie, I think, from the 40s called Pinky. Which gives you an idea that, you know, that it was, I saw it so long ago, that this woman was passing for white. But passing for white, they are white if they're passing for, God. All right. Thank you very much. Well, there was a whole thing. I mean, I'm not, it's really complex because people felt that, that they were able to get out from under what African Americans mm-hmm. were suffering, during that period of exclusion and lynching and, discrimination and what have you. But, all that race stuff is crazy. Speaking of that, let's get Maurice from Detroit on. Maurice!
Hello, Peter. Hello, Jolene.
Hi, Marie.
Come on, you can talk to me about race. What do you think about what I've been saying?
You know what? A lot of it is true. You know, people thought they could better themselves if they wasn't black and they was late enough to pass for white.
Mm-hmm.
But I called over, I want to like to touch base to what you on three topics.
Okay.
One thing they do, they brought the Glock to work.
Yeah, the guy that brought the Glock pistol to work, yeah.
So you can tell that you can tell them to take that piece of plastic and use it for paperweight. Because Glock's a crap. You know, if you want to get a gun, get an H&K and get a Sig Sauer, you got something.
Okay.
For me myself, I carry a 229 Sig and a 40 caliber.
Well, you be prepared. That's what the Boy Scouts say. You know, you always,
always
you may want to shoot through a brick wall or something.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie Day of the Condor with Robert Redford in it?
Yeah, Day of the Condor. Yeah, 7 days. What is it?
No, it's Day of the Condor.
Day of the Condor. Yeah.
It's Redford in that movie back in the '70s. The United States had plans to invade the Middle East for the oil. Okay, there's one more movie, Twilight's Last Gleaming with Charlton Heston, when they showed this, the country, the military, killed the police, killed the president, because they was using them as a hostage to get the missile final. The actor's real name, last name was Kennedy. But I said all that to say this. I really like Obama. I wish he wasn't president. I think they're going to use him to kill him in order to have an excuse to leak all this stuff over to Iran, but they can invade Iran from Iraq.
Wow. Well, we got to look out for that. All right. Thank you very much for all of that, Maurice. 313-298-WRIF. Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, these old blues singers. Back in, I have an LP from the 70s where they did all this music with, like, Clapton and people like that. And they got John Mayall, you know, John Mayall, Room to Move, and that song. They got a song with him, God, strangle, called You're Just a White Boy Lost in the Blues. You know, good, great blues number. That's me. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number, and some open lines for you, so grab them if you would like. And our next caller is from the city of Detroit. Oh, no, talking about the city of Detroit from Allen Park. It's Sean. Sean, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up going on, guys?
We are doing a talk show. Welcome.
Great, great. Well, just keeping in line with the last two callers. For the first caller, I got gas for $1.93 today.
Good.
And for the second caller, I actually carry a Ruger 380 with me with everywhere, you know, everywhere I go. And the next thing, I just want to ask you, you made a comment about Mayor Coleman Young. I was born and raised in the city. I was a Detroit police officer for a few years. And I don't know, Peter, if you grew up in the city or anything like that, but I just want to give you a second to correct yourself. You're not saying that Mayor Coleman Young was a good mayor, correct?
Well, you know, he was handed a bad deal. I don't, you know, he was too confrontational, too authoritarian, a lot of his stuff. But one of the things I always ask people is, tell me what policies that Coleman Young either did institute that were harmful or didn't institute that he should have that were good. Where have you got to look for the city collapsing has to do with banks, has to do with the car companies, nothing to do with Coleman Young's policies.
Well, I would agree with that. But like I said, I don't know if you lived in the city. I've lived there. I did live there for pretty much all my life. I went to Detroit schools and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw you know, totally destroyed from beginning to end, and even get worse as the years continue to go by. I don't even bother going back to the neighborhood I grew up in, because at one time it was all filled with police officers, firemen, and it's like a ghost town now. It's actually just despicable.
You must have lived on the east side.
How come every time I call, you always want to cut in? I'm still talking. I mean.
Well, too damn bad. We're going to go. You're out of here, pal. I don't know. You just piss me off. All right. Here's our spot.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. We wanted to give you more on the riff, but we ran out of somewhere to put it all. We said, screw it. Let's make a whole nother radio station.
What's that sound?
Riff 2. Made for the Motor City and totally commercial free. Log on from anywhere in the world at Riff2.com.
Now!
Everywhere.
rocks.
What exactly is telemetrics and what does it mean to me?
How does changing light bulbs save me money?
Where are the best places to find organically grown foods?
When will Michigan be seeing an increase in green building?
What are some easy steps my family can take to be more green?
How can my coworkers and I start a recycling program at work?
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at movingmichiganforward.com. You can also join the discussion, offer your ideas, suggestions, and advice on how we can all work together to live greener in Michigan. MovingMichiganForward.com, in partnership with Next Energy, is brought to you in part by IBEW Local 58 and NECA Signatory Employers, The Good Food Company, and Charter One.
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at MovingMichiganForward.com.
MovingMichiganForward.com. Learn, share, grow, make your future green at MovingMichiganForward.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Joined by Jalene Jordan, as usual. Testy? Am I getting a little testy? Well, maybe a little.
You can only be, you know, so even keel for so long.
Yeah,
Peter.
Yeah. It's
you're going to blow up once in a while.
Let's see. Here is here's Josh in Waterford. Josh, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You are on the air, sir.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I'm calling in response to a caller earlier who talked about what would happen if they gave everybody $1 million.
Yeah.
Well, I read this book a long time ago called The Creature from Jackal Island. Are you familiar with that book?
No.
Well, it talks about how money is created, and his theory is that for you know, somebody goes to a house or gets a house, you know, and they get a mortgage for $100,000. Well, the bank doesn't have that money. They just make it out of nothing.
Right.
So all wealth is fake. Money is based on nothing. So every dollar out there is somebody else's debt. See what I'm saying?
Well, I do. But, I mean, the idea, I mean, one of the things that in a modern economy, I mean, there's trillions of dollars of wealth out there, and if someone said, put it all on the table, there's not enough gold or currency that would actually represent that, right?
Right.
Right. So I don't know what to do about that. I mean, it's sort of all this social magic where we have these these pieces of paper with engravings of dead presidents on it, and that represents wealth that we... And as you're saying, in a insubstantial way. But the idea, I mean, some people say we got to go to the gold standard. Well, gold, why is gold valuable? It's been recognized through the ages, but essentially there's an arbitrary value assigned to that. That goes up, it goes down, it's going down right now, right?
Well, the point is I'm trying to make is that if they made everybody have $1 million, there would be no more money in circulation because everybody could pay off their debt. And that's why they won't bail the people out.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. I hadn't thought about that. You know, I was thinking that it was absurd because of how much money that would take. But am I right in thinking? Oh, no, wait a minute. I was thinking $300 million. No, it'd be $300 million people. And each getting $1 million, I cannot do the math. So that'd be...
I don't know why you need a calculator.
300 million million. Do you have any idea what that comes out to be, Josh?
No clue. Probably about what all our money would be, like our debt and all that. Well, that's why they won't do it.
Yeah. Well, all right. We're lucky if they give us peasants $600. So we'll see what Barack Obama is going to do. But thank you for that. All you got to do, Jalene, is take 300 million and add all those zeros.
Okay.
Can you do it?
No, I'm not doing it.
All right. Come on.
I told you, no math.
All right. No math. No math. No math.
There's math whizzes out there who will email us momentarily, I'm sure.
Let's see. Justin Ypsilanti. Justin, hi. You're on the air.
Thanks.
Sure. What's up?
Not much. Gas here in Ypsilanti, $1.87.
Oh! $1.
Yeah. Keeps dropping every day, like a cent or two.
Wow.
I was listening to you earlier on the why Michigan outlawed gay marriages. My feeling is it's more of the older people that are afraid of it. I mean, I remember that one of two counties that actually defeated the proposal, one was Washington County, and we have many university and colleges here in Young Folk, and they was pretty strongly defeated here. So my feeling, maybe as the our generation starts getting older, they'll become more acceptable, and we'll actually overturn these illegal bans, in my eyes.
That's a good point.
And what I'm wondering, actually, and Jalene, do you remember if there was anything in there that can this be taken to the courts? And because the California Supreme Court,
I think there
Court,
can be a repeal or something, can't there?
Well, I'm wondering. I mean, there was a law banning same-sex marriages in California, mm-hmm. and the Supreme Court overturned it.
Right.
They said that it was unconstitutional, both the U.S. and California Constitution. So they put it right in the Constitution. Sarah Palin, who with her rhetoric has increased the threats against Barack Obama, when you have this sort of demonization of gay people who want to express their love legally, that undoubtedly sets the context for gay bashing and gay discrimination against gay people as well.
Yeah. Why don't you find more important things to...
Yeah. All right, Justin, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Like poverty.
Yeah. Here's Jody in Rochester. Jody, hi, you're on the air. Hey, Jody. I did. I'm going to put you back on hold, and somebody will tell you the deal. Let's see. Here is Eric in Waterford. Eric, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm curious as to why most liberals appear to be anti-gun.
What makes you think that?
Well, it seems that liberal politicians are the ones that are always pushing the assault weapon bans and any kind of gun legislation.
Why do you think that's anti-gun? I mean, do you think that people ought to be able to have tanks, bazookas, things like that?
Actually, I do.
You're a nut job.
No, I don't.
You should have a tank in your backyard.
No, I think that we should have the right to have a tank in our backyard.
Oh, my God.
I'm all about personal liberty.
Well, that's that, you know. Well, I mean, do you think that there should be licensing for automobiles?
Licensing for automobiles, yes, I do.
Okay, well, come on, that's the state interfering with my right to, how about speed laws?
Well, see, my argument, I hate to interrupt, but my argument is that people should have the right to own automobiles.
Yeah.
Right.
They do.
So,
well, the banks do, yeah.
Well, yeah, you got a point there.
Well, sensible societies don't let people own bazookas. And usually the people that want to own the more destructive weaponry, most people, they have a sensible weapon if they... I have no idea what the majority of guns in this country are for. I mean, I don't know whether it's hunting weapons or home security weapons.
Well, the person who we work with who showed me the Glock...
Yeah, home security.
There were break-ins in this person's condo community.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's like Wealth City where he lives.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They're happening when people aren't home.
Yeah. So
when you're not there with your gun, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
I don't think
wanting restrictions on the type of weaponry that people can have it constitutes being anti-gun. And I don't know. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call, although you're a nut job. People should have tanks. I don't take too much of offense to that. I mean, people certainly call me a nut job, too, for a lot of my opinions. So I would say not that there's anything. Well, there's nothing wrong with. There is something wrong with right-wing nut jobs. There's nothing wrong with left-wing nut jobs, like me.
Peter.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's Mike in Canton. Mike, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, Jolene, how you doing?
Good.
Hey.
What's up?
Hey, I called a couple weeks ago. Our phone call kind of got carried away with the name of my hockey team.
With what?
Oh,
the hockey team, yeah.
Wait, the Red...
Red Army.
The Red Army.
Hey, we got your picture.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? I didn't send that. My assistant captain, who was with me that night, he's a Michigan TV personality. I'm not going to say his name, but you obviously have in your email, and he hosts a show every weekend. And he actually told me tonight he sent that to you earlier in the week or something.
Oh,
so,
loved it.
You guys look great.
Thank you. Real quick, I just want to say, despite McCain admitting voting with Bush Co. 90% of the time, I'm surprised at the outcome of his support, really. I was surprised that the election was that close.
In some ways, yeah, that it wasn't a real blowout.
Right.
That what? I'm sorry.
I mean, with Bushko having a 20% approval rating and you've got McCain running for president, that's not too smart to admit to voting with that administration 90% of the time.
Well, he certainly didn't admit it. He did the Obama.
There was a television ad.
That was the Obama in the Obama ad.
Right.
Yeah, not
right.
in. Yeah, he tried to do everything he could to separate himself from Bush, and Bush and Darth Vader Cheney were, you know, hiding out. I mean, this is unheard of, where a sitting president did not come to the aid of his party's candidate. Yeah, I mean, I think that there...
Well, Clinton wasn't out there for Kerry very much, was he?
Didn't
he kind of back off?
I don't know. Well, I mean, he wasn't that much for Gore either, but he didn't hide.
Yeah.
I mean, Clinton's popularity was high when he left. I think a lot of it was racism that he didn't. But on the other hand, it was only because of Barack Obama and who he was that it created this enormous enthusiasm. I think that there was this huge fear factor, and it was stoked as the only thing that McCain Palin had going for them that drove some people to think, geez, I'd rather stay with these slave masters than take a chance on a revolt against the people that have made my life miserable. You know, they're willing to stay with something tried and true, even though it screwed them so badly. What a bunch of dopes.
Right, no doubt. You know, Hugo Chavez of Venezuela has an approval rating of 80%. He uses his oil profits from that country to help ensure, you know, help with the health insurance and education of the people of that country.
Right.
So maybe...
We know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Citgo, so, do you shop for gas at Citgo?
Citgo, I do when I can.
They don't
sell diesel, though, and I have a moving truck that runs on diesel, so I try to... Yeah, maybe if they still do, I'd be there more.
Let me tell you something real quickly before you go, though, Mike, or ask you, because it says here you wanted to talk about some political movies that are out.
Yes, Steven Soderbergh, he's got a double feature coming out. It's called, it's about Che Guevara, called The Argentine.
Oh, yeah, right.
And the second one is called The Gorilla, or Gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars Benicio del Toro as Che Guevara, and it's played at the New York Film Festival once or twice, I believe, but I haven't heard. I'm trying to figure out, you know, are they going to release it at movie theaters? Is it going to be something that, you know, you can order?
No, it's going to have a big release. Hey, you know what I just saw? Maybe did I say this last week? This old 1949 film called All the King's Men? Never heard of it. Okay, it was an Academy Award winner. It was about essentially based on the life of Huey Long, this powerful governor in the southern state, which really was Louisiana, but they didn't say. It's an incredible film. And then it was redone with Sean Penn playing the character Willie Stark in 2006. I just saw the trailer for that. But I would recommend at least the 1949 film if you got like Netflix or something like that. But I think I'm going to check out the Sean Penn film as well. All right. Thank you very much, Mike. And Jolene, you and I are not going to see W, huh?
No.
I do not want to see him.
I'm done, okay? I'm done. I don't need one more rehashing. I already know that he snorted up half of Peru.
Yeah.
I know that he, you know, did, what do they call those? Those big beer bongs?
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So what?
I just don't want to see him.
I just don't.
Ugh. I'm just mad. I took all the election stuff off my website. I'm going to take all the Bush stuff down.
This is big.
This is so ready to get over these people.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine if they would have won? I just could not have stood it.
I couldn't have either.
I mean, aren't all of you glad that they are gone?
Hey, I said if...
And doesn't it seem like they're gone?
If Joe Nolenberg lost. If he won, because I was so convinced that he was going to lose, that I was going to run around up and down my street naked.
Really?
I know. Well, Too bad you live so far.
Yeah. Joe Nolenberg
<Five blocks.
laughs> is this right-wing congressman from the 9th District in Michigan. They got defeated by Gary Peters.
That needed to go.
He
needed to go. So, but I actually was a bit relieved that I didn't need to go streaking.
Yeah, good. Here's Sean in Monroe. Sean, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. Go ahead.
How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
I just want to comment on the whole California ban on the gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I understand what you guys are saying, and I have the mindset that if it don't hurt me, oh well, you know, whatever. But that's why they have... You know, votes. The majority of the people in California didn't want gay marriage.
It wasn't the majority. It was only 52 to 49%.
That's the majority.
Well, come on.
Well, I mean, there are some states
God,
that say...
give me a break.
There are some states that say to amend the Constitution, you have to have 60%, and that's why I forgot where...
It's just not a majority to me. Yeah, it's like a narrow margin.
But, you know, one of the things, Sean, is that you don't want rights up for popular vote. I mean, if you would have said... should black people in America have equal rights? And
at a certain
in 1954
time.
Or something like that,
they never would have gotten rights.
1964, right?
That's a good point.
Yeah. All right. So democracy.
I get what you're saying, but I still call it a narrow margin.
Yep. Absolutely. Thank you. Let's see here. I'm just searching around. Here's Ed in Southfield. Yeah, actually, this is like a bare naked ladies song, If I Had $1 Million, right?
If I had $1 Million.
Ed, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
Yeah, I changed my mind over the time of thinking about it. I wanted to say a little something about Proposal 1.
Oh, yeah, medical marijuana. It won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that...
I got to go to the doctor tomorrow. What? I'm sorry, I spoke over you. Go ahead.
Over the time with medical marijuana, possibly leading to legalization and or not decriminalization, I think it will put a big damper on the organized crime in our nation.
Well, it could. I mean, as we know, that's what argument people often make. You have prohibition, you make something that's commonly available, whether it's alcohol or...
Well, people who I know who sell weed have nothing to do with the mafia.
You know people who sell weed? I wouldn't admit that on the air. You meant hypothetically, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah, I did.
Hypothetically.
Right. Hypothetically.
Right. Right.
Thank you, Peter.
Right. Yeah.
Not so much with the organized crime as much as just the petty street thugs and whatnot.
Well, most of the people I hypothetically know who sell weed aren't petty street thugs either.
No.
I don't know. Everyone's got to have a job.
We're going to go to a different phone call. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. John in Detroit. John, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, you're a good, fine team doing a good job.
Well, thank you, John.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, you're just going to go, Joe, and Bush League. Nice to know they are going. I actually... had met Oliver Stone back in school, and got to meet Robert Penn Warren, who wrote All the President's Men. He was a teacher at a certain college, which was nameless because they didn't contribute much to this country.
Yeah, different book, though. All the President's Men was like a 70s book. All the King's Men was the Robert Penn Warren.
As opposed to, right. And, the remake wasn't quite as good, but... Yeah, Robert Penn Warren was at that certain school, but it's nice to know Obama's capable of being an open mind. I don't know about Rambo, Emmanuel, but let's encourage him. Maybe some calls to since he's admiring Abe Lincoln, who was one of the early Republicans who brought in opponents, that he'd maybe get the likes of Ralph Nader and Cynthia McKinney, as well as, of course, Dennis Kucinich would be a great addition. And
oh, yes.
Yeah, you ought to get all those folks
heck
in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you saw Jon Stewart, but he was off. He had this reporter on from Wasilla was saying, Sarah Palin's so dumb, she thinks Lincoln's vice president was town car.
Oh, no.
She says, Sarah Palin's so dumb, she thinks the capital of China is Chinatown.
Oh, no.
Africa, China. Well, Sarah, yeah, up in, let's hope that actually the mayor of Anchorage, who's got some... Begich might somehow get in. It was close enough, but it looks like they're going to have the first felon, the senior Senate member, and she'll get to finagle the next senator.
She can't appoint herself.
No, she can't.
Well, that's good.
That's the last thing that I read is that she cannot.
How about if she appointed the first dude with his silk underwear that the Republican Party paid for?
God.
What is
it? You quit talking about that Todd Palin is such. Ugh.
Yeah. And what about.
I don't know what people find so hunky about that guy.
What about the second hunk, the kid that knocked up her daughter?
Bristol's man, whatever his name was?
Yeah.
Oh, he quit school to get a job so he could support that baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, John, thank you very much. By the way, about talking to Barack Obama, I'm thinking that people ought to go to to Washington on January 20th. Both to say congratulations, but also to say we need a progressive agenda. We need to have these wars ended. We need universal health coverage. We need to cut the military budget tremendously. I mean, right now, Barack Obama is talking about increasing the armed forces by 90,000. We don't need 90,000 more troops. We need less wars, and then we wouldn't need 90,000 more troops. We need to end the Iraq war. We need to end the war in Afghanistan. Why are we fighting in Afghanistan? Because we want to defeat the Taliban, and we want to defeat the Taliban because...
We want their oil.
Yeah, I guess.
That little pipeline thing. And
pipeline, yeah.
Life is, you know, good when they have the poppies going, right?
Yeah. And so we're, just as the United States destroyed the population and the infrastructure of Iraq, Barack Obama cannot be allowed to do that to Afghanistan as well. George Bush was perfectly all right with the Taliban in power, even inviting them to Texas when he was governor. They made the fatal.
And they came to Texas.
They did. Yeah, they made the fatal error of allowing Osama bin Laden to establish a redoubt, they call it, in the mountains. But it wasn't like they gave him an office in downtown Kabul or anything. And the armed forces of the United States would have been best used in a punitive expedition to rout out these criminals that did their murderous deed on 9/11 and have been done with it. I mean, the politics of the Taliban are very similar to the right-wing religious nut jobs that inhabit this country, that want a theocracy, like Sarah Palin, if you look deeply into her religious beliefs. But we have no problem with supporting people that do that to women, that that have these harsh systems of justice, if they're in Saudi Arabia, for instance, the country which provided 19 of the 20 people that laid our country low that awful September day. All right, well, let me get a few more calls in. In fact, I'll try to get everybody in real quickly. Here's Pete in Estrel Beach. Is this in Michigan, Pete?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air. Tell me quick.
Well, I heard tonight someone complained about Sarah Palin's daughter having a boyfriend that quit high school to get a job. What else are you supposed to do? You have to raise a kid.
Oh, I don't.
I wasn't saying it was bad. I was just saying what he did.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't. I didn't finish high school till I was 20 years old, and never finished college. Not because I was raising a kid or anything. I was just layabout. Did you have a college degree? Don't you?
I do.
I am so impressed.
I do.
All right. Thank you.
And I graduated when I was I graduated a year early from high school.
Wow. I just kept getting kicked out of school.
But it took me 10 years to get my undergrad. Quit. So yeah. Am I redeemed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Here is Brad Nipsilanti. Brad,
hey,
hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Brad.
Oh, I was calling to basically that guy who had said people have a right to have bazookas and tanks. Yeah, he's kind of a nut job. I agreed with you on that. But I do understand his standpoint from people having the right to bear arms. I'm pro Second Amendment myself. However, my problem is Barack Obama's stand on the Second Amendment. He wants to ban the use of firearms for home defense.
Wait. What gives you that idea?
No, no.
What gives you that idea?
I got it all through the NRA.
Well, they're trying to scare you.
They're an unreliable source. There's nothing. Go Google it. I mean, you'll get all this right-wing stuff that says that's his intent, but there's nothing there. He's not going to do it. Don't worry about it. All right. Let's see. Our final caller. Hey, I didn't think our program was going to be international, but Eric is joining us from Canada. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Okay, Peter, we've talked before, but, okay, I'm a stout conservative, which is, I guess, a Republican down there. But, you know, Canada and United States are tied. Like, I mean, you guys go down the toilet economically, sooner or later, we're going to be, you know, following you right down the same path. But do you really think that, look at his stance during the whole election, Barack's stance was, we're going to pull out of Iraq as soon as possible, you know, which was kind of an open statement in the first place.
Wait a minute. He never said as soon as possible. I mean, as soon as possible would probably be in a couple of months. He's talking about 18 months, way too long. I mean, you know, people don't even notice that every week four or five Americans say, oh, the violence is really down. Yeah, only four or five Americans are killed.
Yeah, and one from right here that I read the other day, Waterford, yeah.
Hundreds of Iraqis are still getting killed, all for Bush's lie. So I think it's up. Barack Obama has to be pressured to immediately end this war. All right, thank you very much, Eric. Thanks for making our show international. Angeline Jordan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, listeners.
Yeah.
All you callers.
Alex, our phone screener, and Al, who does everything else.
Yes.
Helps produce the show.
A podcast of the show will be available at WRIF.com.
Look for us on Facebook this week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Debbie, thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
Yeah. And how about, should we mention MySpace? Are you doing it?
Yes, it's there. Yeah, myspace.com/nightcallshow.
All right, talk next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this. On your radio, on your computer, and now on your brand new iPhone 3G. Your new Apple iPhone 3G connects you to 101 WRIF from anywhere in the world.
Damn, look at that. Get you
on a room. Log on and listen worldwide at WRIF.com. The RIF.
Did you know that 1 in 5 Michigan residents is living at or below the national poverty level? That means supporting a family of four on $21,200 a year. On November 13th, at the Voices for Action Poverty Summit at Cobo Hall, Michigan will launch a statewide effort to reduce poverty and maximize economic opportunities. Join keynote speakers Martin Luther King III and Governor Jennifer Granholm for an important discussion on this statewide initiative. Log on to michigan.gov/poverty to register today. This message sponsored by the Michigan Department of Human Services.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing, and we want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new MKS, the MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. You can check out our vehicle inventory on the site, and you can bet that if you don't see what you're looking for, we can surely find it for you. Experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood and Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com. That's DEMMER.com.
Experience the Demmer difference. Right now at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury, lease a 2009 Lincoln MKS for $379 a month. Based on an AZ plan with Ford Lincoln Mercury lease renewal and $1,969 down plus tax. See dealer for details or check them out on the web at Demmer.com.
Metallica, Metallica is coming January 13th to the Joe. Listen to 101 WRIF all week to score your free tickets to the show. One lucky room winner will be in the running for their own little piece of history. A set list for the show signed by the entire band. Interviews, free tickets, the coolest. Only one station in Detroit hooks you up.
Yo, Detroit, this is Kirk from Metallica, and this is 101 WRIF.
No. 101.1 WRIF. WRIF HD1 Detroit. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's Peter Werby with you. And if you've been listening to this show over the months, over the years, a couple of times before has been Ishmael Ahmed. He now is the director of the Michigan Department of Human Services, and he was last on a few months ago talking about our state and the economy and how it's affecting the people that his department serves, in many cases, the poor. And since then, we've made lots of strides. We've been listening to this station. You've heard all the ads for the Voices for Action Poverty Summit, and I said to Ishmael Ahmed, you have to come back and talk about this conference and some of the stuff around it. Well, it turns out that it's much bigger than we ever thought it was going to be, and I advisedly use the pronoun we, because I'm involved in it, and so are so many other people from this station. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to our studios Ishmael Ahmed. Things have really exploded for this Voices for Action Poverty Summit coming up this week.
Right. It's November 13th, and, you know, our hopes for the Poverty Summit were to get maybe 2,000 people or so to come. It's looking more like 5,000 people are going to be there, and people from all walks of life, decision makers and legislators and advocates who you would expect, but a lot of low-income people, people who are taking on poverty in their lives are going to be there. About a third of the people are registered, and they're coming from all over the state to try to find solutions to the problems that plague their lives.
Now, this is Thursday, November 13th, coming right up. It's going to be at Cobo Hall. It's open to the public, and if you get a pen and pencil, we will give you information. Boy, but that sounds so 20th century. What is it? There's a website, I'm sure, right?
Sure is.
Okay.
It's michigan.gov/poverty.
Yeah. And tell us who's going to be there. Quite an array of speakers.
Well, there are people from all over the country, but kind of the headliners are Governor Granholm will be talking about poverty in Michigan, and Martin Luther King III, who is carrying on with his father's mantle, will be talking about Half by Ten, which is a movement to cut poverty in the United States by half in 10 years.
Now, there's somewhere in the Bible, maybe even Jesus, who said the poor will always be with us, but certainly Michigan has more than its share, and you told me before our broadcast that even though you knew the statistics as the director of the Department of Human Services, you've been going around the state and getting a firsthand look at all of this. Can you give us a little bird's-eye view of your tour?
Well, first of all, at the national level, there are about 36 million people who are in poverty, an amazing number, I think. And I think it's interesting, too, if you want to jump back a little bit and look at Lyndon Johnson and the war on poverty and all that, 26% of the American people then were in poverty. When we abandoned the war on poverty, it was 13%. And it's stayed pretty much that since then. So a concentrated effort on poverty can make a tremendous difference. Here in Michigan, there's about 2 million people. That's one out of every five people who are either in or near poverty. And that doesn't tell the whole story because about 500,000 of them are children. So children are overrepresented in poverty. And that still doesn't tell the whole story because one out of three people, people like you and me, are considered low income. Translation, low income means they don't make enough money to live. One of the things most people aren't aware of, people who are in poverty or on food stamps or general assistance, often work. In fact, the majority of them work every day. Part-time or in jobs that just don't make enough money to live. In our state, we have 1.3 million people on food stamps, 1.6 million people on Medicaid, and about 80,000 families on cash assistance. Most of those people work.
Now, you mentioned food stamps. Now, a number of officials, including yourself and media people, who was supposed to be me, have to say I was a little lax on this. We're supposed to take the food stamp challenge. I wonder if you could tell us what that was and what its significance was and why you wanted it to come into being.
Well, a few months back, I had the idea, and it's not original, of trying to get into the shoes of people who live on food stamps and are having difficulty in their lives. And so suggested to a group of friends and colleagues and leaders and others that it might be a good idea to try to live on food stamps, which is equivalent to $5.87 a day. And I had originally thought to ask about 100 people, and it was such a popular idea that 300 people joined us, and we lived for 5 days on food stamps. That included 30 legislators on both sides of the aisle. It included, religious leaders, media people, community leaders. It included almost the entire cabinet the governor and her family, me and my wife, Margaret, and many, many, many others. We actually emailed each other back and forth, and it was quite the experience. For me, it was a shocking experience. You know, the first thing I did is they gave us a bridge card. You don't actually get food stamps. You get an electronic card. And between me and my wife, you know, it came to about $50 to live on. And so first we decided to go to a store where no one would know us, so they wouldn't ask, why are you using a bridge card? We were a bit embarrassed.
And let me ask you this, because this reminds me of a report I got from somebody else. Was it because you knew that people would know you're the director of the Michigan Department of Human Services, or just a general embarrassment?
Well, it's both. I didn't want people to think I was cheating the system. And secondly, there's a kind of general embarrassment that comes, you know, with being part of a government program. Although, really, we shouldn't be embarrassed. It's money that we've earned from our hard labor over the years that's accrued to these programs. So a working person that finds themselves in difficulty. And the truth is, Peter, that, you know, anybody, a person who has a medical emergency or gets laid off, gets a layoff notice, or misses a handful of checks, or something else goes bad in their life. And a middle-class person who's worked their entire life can find themselves sinking into poverty. And so, you know, a lot of people, frankly, are going through this embarrassment.
You know, it was actually inappropriate for me to laugh. I was reflecting on that because, Jalene Jordan, my colleague here at the radio station, she had the same experience. She said she went somewhere where no one would know her, and you can imagine this was for a week. People that have no other choice but then to take, to sign on to this program. So it's really not a laughing matter. Being humiliated publicly is probably one of the worst things that can happen to one.
Yeah, and if you take into consideration that many of these people are still working for a living, I talked to a woman in the Northern Peninsula who basically is working 70 hours a week and is in danger of losing her home and is on food stamps. So even people who work so hard, you know, find themselves in this situation. For me, it was making a list to go to the store on and you know, being very careful what is and is not on this list. I decided I was going to have a great deal of bread and peanut butter. I like peanut butter anyway. And but my wife has allergies, and so we were trying to figure out what she could eat, you know, and what I could eat. And it really, you know, was a list that was very bartered. And then we went into the store and quickly found ourselves going over the amount. And I counted each item. And so when we got to the cashier, I waited to go to a cashier who had nobody in line and told him, embarrassed, look, I've never used a bridge card before. Can you show me how to do it? He said, don't worry. It was a guy named Joe Gonzalez, really nice guy, no, really wanted to help me. And so he said, just put your food up and I'll help you through it. And then I found that I had calculated badly.
Oh.
I had at least six items that I didn't have the money for, and I kept pushing them back behind the rest of the groceries as it calculated. And finally, it was clear I couldn't get those items, and he said it was a Kroger's. And so he said, are you a Kroger member? And I said, no. He said, if we sign you up, you can get more of those items.
Oh,
so I signed up, and I got four of the six items. But in the end, I had to leave some noodles and honey behind. I'd plan the meals based on them. But the worst part, being the director of the Department of Human Services, was when I swiped my card, it didn't work. And so I tried to give him the code, and I swiped my card again, and it didn't work. And I did it four times, and what happens is, on the fourth time, it shuts down. And so he told me, embarrassed, you're going to have to go see your worker.
Oh, man.
So I ended up actually using my Visa card to buy it and keeping to the amount so I could still do the pledge, honestly.
Ishmael Ahmed is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show, and as he just said, he's the director of the Michigan Department of Human Services, and the department is sponsoring the Voices for Action Poverty Summit. It's coming up this Thursday, November 13th. The public is invited, and just in a minute I want to get to the details of that and how we can invite all of you as well. But the final question about the food stamps is, can one do it? I know I was just looking at a pack of cheese, some Fontina. It seems like a fairly ordinary cheese, and I looked at it, and it was $14.99 a pound.
That's exactly right. Actually, I made the same decision. I wanted to buy one kind of cheese, but I was looking for the cheapest cheese, which was about $5.60 a pound, and decided to get less slices of the $7 a pound. I ran out of bread by Thursday of that week, so I didn't have anything to put my peanut butter on. And lived on mainly peanut butter sandwiches and apples. You can do it. You can live, and you can even live nutritiously if you're careful, but nobody would want to live that way. And 1.3 million people do live that way every day. I can't imagine living that kind of lifestyle. Many of us out there just, you know, I have a cup of chai tea every morning. It costs $4. I had to give up coffees and teas and whatnot. And actually, the first day I stopped to gas up and looked across at a Starbucks and said, nobody will really know. And in the end, I was true to myself and the pledge. But, you know, that's not a choice that most people have that have this situation. Talking to many, many others, people have similar, you know, similar situations. Some people did fairly well. You know, they were able to live and get through, and, you know, they didn't starve. Some people did have difficulty. One friend of mine was telling me about his children who literally got cranky because he wasn't giving them enough food.
Yeah. And we learn statistics of the poor that so many are go to bed hungry or are at risk of hunger. Now, we're talking about doing something about this. The Michigan Department of Human Services is sponsoring Voices for Action Poverty Summit. It's going to be on Thursday, November 13th. It's subtitled Investing in Michigan, and the speakers are going to include Governor Granholm. Also, the keynote speaker is Martin Luther King III. And, I mean, this is, I'm just so heartened that, a department that services the poor wouldn't just take all of the definitions of poverty for granted. Okay, people are poor, we gotta get them stuff. You're actually talking about an action conference. Tell us more about it.
Well, I think there are three strategies to end poverty. There's a national strategy. Obviously, things like improving the living wage, growing tax income credits, universalizing health care, all will help. And there's a national group of people. Many states, in fact, have adopted half by 10 as a goal.
Explain that again, though. People may have missed it. The half by 10.
Half by 10 means that we would reduce poverty in the United States by 50% in the same way that they did during the war on poverty. And though there were mistakes then, it was not the wrong thing to do. It was the right thing to do, and it was effective. And I think we need to take that up at the national level. And at the state level, you know, there are strategies. Some of them are, you know, in place that need to take place. There's a program called No Worker Left Behind that, if fully funded, would promise any worker who lost their job retraining and people who have low-wage jobs the possibility of being trained for higher-wage jobs. I think those are important. There's been an attempt to universalize health care in Michigan, and actually the Department of Health asked for a waiver to do so from the federal government, and it's languished in Washington for 2 years now. You know, so there are programs like that that can help people along with their education, as well as provide a safety net. But the end, nobody wants to live in poverty or on these programs. They want to move their families forward. I've traveled the state, mm-hmm. and talked to literally thousands of people who were in poverty and or middle class and worried about falling into poverty. And they're not people that want to live that way. They want people, they're people who want decent jobs and are willing to work for it and so forth. But the third element, and this is going to be a strange thing for someone in government to say, and this is what the summit really is about, is that no meaningful reform has ever happened by government. I'll say it again. No meaningful reform has ever happened by government.
I agree.
Governments respond to the people, at least mostly. And so when there's a real movement against poverty, when we know what we're asking government to do, when we know what we're asking of ourselves to do, then we can take on poverty. And the aim of this summit is to bring to people together from eight different regions of Michigan, because poverty is different in every different region. If you live in the Upper Peninsula, your next door neighbor may live 6 miles away, you know, and that's different than Detroit or Port Huron or and the problems are slightly different in these places. So we have to have local strategies to build political will and also to organize ourselves to attack poverty in our own communities. Answers do not just reside in government. And so the summit will do three things. One, we'll have a group of key speakers talking about these things, and it'll start off that way. You know, but then after that, there'll be thematic workshops talking about poverty in children, poverty in education, a living wage, all those kinds of things. And there are about 16 of those. And there'll also be concessions by community organizations. I think we're going to have about 150 of them. But the main part will be at the end, where the regions come together, people in poverty, advocates, government, community, all to talk about how to organize themselves to take on poverty. And the department will support them. We'll try to give them the support they need to wage an ongoing battle against poverty in their own communities.
Now, I'm going to be at the Voices for Action Poverty Summit. It's November 13th, this coming Thursday, and it is open to everyone. It's open to the public, but there is a registration fee, right? If what if you're poor?
Okay, well, the registration fee is $20 maximum for anyone who wants to come. And I strongly suggest that you sign up online, because we don't know what our capacity. We want to have people come through the door, but that's we don't know whether we can meet the number of people coming. We're a bit overwhelmed by it. And then secondly, if you are a senior or a student, it's $10. And if you are low income or can't afford to come, you can come for free.
That's good. And again, tell us the website.
It's www.michigan.gov/poverty.
Ishmael Ahmed, we've known each other for a long time, and I know you're a man of deep public concern for the good of our community, a man with a high level of compassion. I know it's not going to be a shock to you for me when I tell you there are people out there who aren't, who are pretty, in my estimation, pretty low on the compassion scale and think, look, I got mine, poor, too bad. Why should they care? Does poverty cost them anything?
Well, that's exactly right. They should care, even if they have a very limited self-interest. The cost of people who go without in Michigan is huge. My department is the second largest department in government, and we spend $5 billion a year to assure a safety net. How much better would it be if people could work and had the education for the new jobs that they want, and how much better could they take care of their families? I believe, and I'm a bit of an optimist, but I don't believe that much, that there really is no room for poverty in the United States. We have the resources to attack it. The number of people who should be on assistance programs should be minimal. But it takes a full force attack. It takes people not only in poverty or who face poverty, you know, with a layoff or whatever might happen to them, but it takes everybody in this society to change this, and it is changeable.
Yeah, that's important. And we've, of course, just had an historic election with a man who says change is his watchword. Does this make things easier for you, or does it not have a great effect on the state level?
Well, I hope it makes things easier. You know, one good sign is that the Obama campaign adopted half by 10 as one of its platforms. But, you know, moving ahead with, you know, universal health care and all the other kinds of things that have to happen in this economy is going to be a struggle. Even a good-minded, willing politician needs a base that will stand up and demand what's right for all of us. And so whether you believe that this president or any other president or legislator or governor, you know, wants to do the right thing or will do the right thing, unless you provide the basis for them to do that, they are just tilting against windmills.
We just have about 2 minutes left, and I want to give the details of the Voices for Action Poverty Summit that's going to occur this Thursday in Cobo Hall. But it may come as a surprise. In fact, it surprised me a little that what you said about the earlier generation ago war on poverty. Most people think that was a failure, that it just made a big kind of government bureaucracy, and the poor are still with us. But it actually did have an impact.
As I said, we moved from, we cut poverty in half in less than 15 years. But by the late 70s, you know, essentially new ideas, I think many bad ideas, came into government, and we had this, you know, era of blaming poverty on the poor rather than looking for solutions. And so we have a long way to go here, but it's doable, and I think we need to organize ourselves to do what we can.
And since one of the speakers is Governor Jennifer M. Granholm, she's on board with this. This is not going to be talk or feel good. This is, as the title says, Voices for Action Poverty Summit. This is only the beginning this Thursday.
Well, I'm hoping that you know, I believe in everyday people and their ability to change the equation. And as I said, the governor is on board with this. She did the food stamp challenge. She supports our efforts. As she told me that good leaders point out a problem, talk about the solutions, and then organize people to take it on. But in the end, it's you out there that will make the difference. And that's what we're counting on.
Okay, let's go through the details one more time. It's Thursday, November 13th, Cobo Hall, beginning in the morning, and I now have memorized the website, although I haven't. I thought I did. Go ahead.
It's www.michigan.gov/poverty.
Right, and if you go to the website, all the details are there. My guest has been Ishmael Ahmed. He is the director of the Michigan Department of Human Services. I'm going to be a registrant at that conference, and I hope to see many of you there as well. Ishmael Ahmed, thank you so much for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
$90. All of you who have stuck with me.
Divided by 100,000 citizens.
Through very difficult times.
$10 ahead. Now, you're not getting much more out of these guys.
I'm sorry.
Good thing you can still text message us at the RIF. Get your quest, cuss info, and your unfair cellular advantage. Text keyword WRIF to 71913. And
I'm sorry.
We'll never be embarrassed to hear from you.
I would never quit on you.
Log on to WRIF.com for more details. 101 WRIF.
Full blown up.
Imagine having the money for liposuction, a nose job, or tummy tuck. Well, now you can get the cosmetic procedure you want from an independent board-certified surgeon, all for less than you think. That's right. The independent board-certified surgeons managed by Dr. Say Yes are making cosmetic procedures affordable to everyone. Now you can afford the treatment you want with financing guaranteed, no matter what your credit looks like. If you've been thinking about becoming the perfect you, just call Dr. Say Yes at 1-866-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4-4
405-495-8189. Their independent board-certified surgeons have assisted over 30,000 people, and they can help you afford the cosmetic procedure you've always wanted. Call Dr. CS for your free consultation. Call 1-866-495-8189. Your call is confidential with no obligation. Call 1-866-495-8189. That's 1-866-495-8189.
Your credit card debt is getting out of control. You're having trouble making the monthly minimums. Sound familiar? You have to do something, but what? Well, you don't have to file for bankruptcy. The mortgage brokers want you to put up your family home to pay off credit card debts. Problem is that more often than not, you find yourself using the credit card again. Only this time there's no equity left in your home, and you have a whole new pile of credit card debt. It doesn't have to be this way. We're Credit Card Relief. We help people just like you get out of debt in months instead of years, and save you thousands of dollars. Call now for a free consultation. We're an attorney-driven program with an excellent reputation. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 1-866-290-8282. 1-866-290-8282. Not available in all states. 1-866-290-8282.
Do you know the difference between the millions of millionaires in this country and you? Simple. They decided they wanted to be millionaires, so they went out and did it. So, do you want to be a millionaire? If the answer is yes, then get ready to write down a number that could change your life forever. Because now you can get a free CD that shows you everything you need to start making the kind of money you deserve with an internet business that virtually runs itself. So you're making cash even while you're sleeping by selling product you don't have to see, store, or even pay for. There are millions of millionaires out there. Don't you want to be one of them? Get the free CD from Internet Speedway and start making money with an internet business that virtually runs itself. For a free CD, call 1-800-339-1419. Deciding to be wealthy is the first step to becoming wealthy. Call now, 1-800-339-1419. The free CD is yours by calling 1-800-339-1419.
This is Matt Dowd from Jack Denver Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that we at Jack Denver Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing, and we want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new MKS, the MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the MKX, Jack Denver Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. You can check out our vehicle inventory on the site, and you can bet that if you don't see what you're looking for, we can surely find it for you. Experience the Denver difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood and Dearborn. Give us a call today. 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Check us out at Demmer.com. That's DMMER.com.
Experience the Demmer difference. Right now at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury, lease a 2009 Lincoln MKS for $379 a month. Based on an AZ plan with Ford Lincoln Mercury lease renewal and $1,969 down plus tax. See dealer for details or check them out on the web at Demmer.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, it's Sunday, so we should talk about religious matters. In fact, the Federal Communications Commission used to demand that radio stations do religious programming, but this is sort of the other end of religious programming. Not religious programming, but about religion. Joining me in my studio is Ronald Aronson. Ronald Aronson is the author, editor of 9 books, including Jean-Paul Sartre, Philosophy in the World. In fact, he is probably the foremost Sartre scholar in the English-speaking world. He teaches at Wayne State University. He's the distinguished professor of the history of ideas, and he's written a book that's challenging to many of you. It's called Living Without God, New Directions for Atheists, Agnostics, Secularists, and the Undecided. Ronald Aronson, Ronald Aronson, thank you for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Glad to be here, Peter.
Yeah, now, so everybody that believes in God should turn off the station, right?
Actually, I'm more interested in talking to people who aren't sure what they believe, or people who don't believe, whatever the name they give to it, and are trying to figure out if they don't believe in God, what they do believe in.
Now, there's been an amazing array of books that have come out, partially in reaction, I believe, to the public religiosity of the president and people around him. Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, and others have written books that have become very popular as atheist book. But one thing that everyone says in reviews of your book, Living Without God, is that it has the nuances that none of the others have. Can you tell us some about that? And maybe even more so, explain about what your reason for writing is.
Sure. I actually start where Dawkins, Hitchens, and Harris leave off. I'm not so concerned about what not to believe. I'm not so concerned about attacking religion or bashing the belief in God. I'm starting out with the fact that a pretty high percentage, unusually high if you look at the surveys, which say almost every American believes in God, but I really think the secularist population in this country might be about one out of every four people. But it's one out of every four people who, in general, are not sure what they do believe. We have a religious culture. Everyone's supposed to believe in God. And people who develop without a belief may reject God and may reject religion, but today, especially today, aren't sure what to do with that, aren't sure where to go from there.
Well, we can feel people like myself who are non-believers. I use it for shorthand. I say I'm an atheist. But it seems to me the question of God seems an imponderable question. So I guess that, what, makes me an agnostic? Who knows? Right? But I wonder about how deep the beliefs are of many people. We know many people in the country, probably the most prominent, their belief seems to be very deep. But I was reminded one time of something that happened last New Year's. A report of the preacher went out on the strip in Las Vegas, and there were these young revelers there, including a lot of young women without tops on. And these preachers were telling them they were going to go to hell. And the young women and the young people, they were indignant. Who gave these people the right to lecture us? But I'm sure if you went up to one of these topless women and said to them, do you believe in God? They'd probably say, what? Yeah. Do you believe that the Bible is the literal word of God? They'd probably say, yeah. Because what does the no mean? Where are you left socially and philosophically if you say no?
Well, let me say a few words commenting on what you just said about religion in America, and then afterwards I can, you know, answer a question or two about those of us who don't believe. Religion in America is vastly overhyped. The most recent and most sophisticated surveys indicate, for example, that about 60% of the American population believes in the traditional personal God of Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. So what do the other believers believe? Well, by and large, they believe in something vague, like a spirit, a universal spirit, or they're not sure what they believe. These are religious believers. These people say, yes, I do believe, but it's not quite clear. Or another statistic. People are asked, where do their morals come from? Where do their moral values come from? Well, you know, 29% say they come from religion. 71% of Americans say their moral values come from elsewhere, daily life, science, philosophy. In other words, most Americans, however they say they believe, don't live actively religious lives in which God is in their life. So I'm interested in those of us who are, in one way or another, living without God.
Well, many people, particularly free thinkers, atheists, agnostics, secularists, and the undecided, which is the subtitle, Ronald Aronson, of your book, Living Without God, point to the pernicious, the bad effects of religion throughout history, the religious strife, the Inquisition, the intolerance that's come from the major religions. And yet, both of us know, both of us being political and social activists for peace and social justice, know that some of the finest people in the movement for that are based their philosophical, their ethical, their moral beliefs in their religion.
Right. As a friend of mine often says, religion seems to make good people better. And, you know where this is going. And bad people worse.
I mean, I think that that people that wear their religion publicly and politically on their sleeve has increasingly being seen by believers and secularists as hypocritical.
Right. I have no problem with people being very religious and letting you know that, as long as two things happen. One, they don't try to impose that on me. That is to say, they recognize they're in a multicultural society, and they have no right to ask me to pray along with them just because they feel they want to pray. That's the two points taken together. Impose it, recognize you're in a multicultural society. Many people, of course, are trying to impose religion on us, and that is the essence of an autocratic, authoritarian, theocratic way of looking at the world.
Well, I think it's interesting that in the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, the first thing in it, doesn't talk about our right to free speech or free press, but says that Congress shall make no law establishing religion, that the Founding Fathers saw the pernicious effect of combining the political state with religion, and all throughout the document, it's very clear, no religious test. People may either swear or affirm when coming into office. Knew from their own history that that religion was best without the state, and the state was much better off without religion.
Right. Another way to put that is to say, look for God in the Constitution. You won't find God there. It's a godless Constitution, and there were efforts to put God into the Constitution right up to and including during the Civil War. Lincoln ignored those efforts right up to and including Mike Huckabee's recent run for president. We talked about a constitutional amendment to put God in the Constitution. It can't fly in this country because it goes so fundamentally against the godless Constitution.
Well, there's some, it's a very long subject about the history of religion in the United States. Secularists particularly, I know I do, make a big point, and as you just did, Ron Berenson, about how secular a document, foundation document of this country is, and the Founding Fathers were deists, and I don't know if any of them were free thinkers, but they weren't, and some of them were deeply Christian. But the religion has ebbed and flowed in this country for a long time. Are there particular trends, or is there something one can look at and see why the nation appears to be more religious at some times than others?
Well, if you look at the history, you'll find one interesting fact, which most Americans are not aware of. The post office operated 7 days a week up until the middle of the 19th century, and it did so because people needed their mail. It was a very important form of communication. And the idea that you should close down because this was the religious day of some people was really strongly opposed. And it only got changed by about the late 1840s, early 1850s.
I mean, in other words, so that this would be the day of worship.
The idea, there were Sabbatarians, the word, meaning we all must observe the Sabbath because some of us are religious. And the country was not constructed that way at first.
Counterpoint Press, by the way, is who published Ronald Aaron's new book, Living Without God, Directions for Atheists, Agnostics, Secularists, and the Undecided. You can go to counterpointpress.com. I'll have a link on my site as well, peterwerby.com. You said that your book takes over from where Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris's and Christian Hitchens' book, and certainly Christopher Hitchens' book is extraordinarily hostile to religion. The subtitle is something like How Religion Ruins Everything.
That's right.
Yeah. Yours isn't that strident.
No, mine's not that strident, and I'm really addressing maybe the fact that despite Dawkins, Hitchens, and Harris, despite what they've done, million-copy bestsellers, most secularists, and I use the term secularist as an umbrella term, I'm not interested in looking at the fine distinctions between atheists, agnostics, freethinkers, secularists, and skeptics, humanists, but most of us are in this country pretty timid. We're not only timid politically, as you can see from the election campaign in which we were invisible. We're not only timid politically, but in terms of what we do believe, compared with the golden age of free thinking, that's the phrase of Susan Jacoby, the author of the book Free Thinkers, since the golden age, which was over 100 years ago, the secular worldview has kind of lost its confidence it's lost its bearings. And that's the reason why I wrote this book, in order to try to recover our bearings, to get our confidence back.
Well, you, I'm sure, are aware of this study that was done a couple of years ago that families said that they would rather, this was Christian families predominantly, I assume, said that they would rather their daughter marry a Muslim, I mean, which is pretty telling in of itself that that's a negative category, than an atheist. I mean, atheists were the lowest on the social order.
There's only one out-in-the-open religious unbeliever in Congress. He calls himself a humanist, a secular humanist, at Pitt Star in the East Bay, Oakland, Berkeley area.
Not Bernie Sanders, from the senator from Vermont?
Not declared, as far as I know.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, and I'm sure you believe this, just like there. How many, I think there's like two openly gay members of Congress, but as Bobby Frank always says, that doesn't include all ones who are closeted. So, I mean, because you are, it gets back to what I was saying, you're a social pariah. I mean, I suppose I can get away with it because we live in a liberal area and I'm a media personality, so maybe that just makes me more interesting. But you can really run into a lot of trouble in business, in social life.
Yes, there are a lot of reasons for this, having to do with the nature of American religiosity, which, by the way, marks us off in every other advanced society. We're far, far more religious. The way religion and politics have kind of come together in the past generation. So there are a number of causes for this pariah phenomenon. What I'm most interested in at the moment, what I wrote the book about, and what I'm trying to help out in the book, is to overcome the phenomenon of we don't know how to answer, how to orient ourselves. We don't know the answer to the important life questions. We're confused about what we do believe, and I think that's really important as another reason why we collectively lack confidence.
Well, let's just talk about some of those things, because people say without God, all is possible. I don't know what or anything one can do anything. There's no ethical strictures on what beastly acts people can commit. What's the fountainhead of your ethics, Ronald Aronson? I mean, why aren't you stealing from your neighbor, coveting your neighbor's wife, murdering? I guess I said that, murder people, stealing, what have you? How come you know without religion, without a belief in God? Why aren't you just a completely amoral person?
Well, in other words, the only reason people are moral is because they're afraid of God's punishment. I would have a big chuckle about that. Because this country, which probably has the highest incarceration rate, one of the highest murder rates, one of the highest crime rates, is also the most religious advanced country in the world. And you've got to somehow, as a sociologist, have to figure out, if religion makes people better, how come we're so much worse? But let's leave that aside, leave religion aside, and talk about a secular worldview. What the morality of a secular worldview depends on the fact, obviously, that there isn't someone, a big daddy in the sky, who's looking down and going to punish us if we do wrong. But it also depends on the fact that we are not isolated atoms in an absurd universe. We're not simply disconnected from each other without any links, ties, or meaning in our life. As I develop it in my book, there's one chapter called Gratitude, I point out that we are part of a larger universe that we are dependent on, going back to the sun, the cosmos, solar system, all of nature, all of natural history, going back to the first single-celled entity in this universe, in this world, 3.6 billion years ago. There's a whole natural history. There's a human history that we're part of. There's a social universe that we're part of, a global economy. In other words, we're not isolated. We get our identity. We get the meaning of our life. We get the shape of who we are. We get our language. We get our nurture. We get our clothing from forces beyond ourselves. And if we look at that dependency and all that we depend on, it's filled with obligations, meaning, morality is part of it. In other words, if we see ourselves as belonging rather than as isolated and alienated, you begin to have a sense of what kind of meaning life would have and what kind of morality we would have. chapter on morality, on social morality in my book, in which I take on the Ten Commandments and say we have to go beyond the Ten Commandments, is called The World on Our Shoulders. In other words, we are responsible for this world with which we're interdependent. There's another chapter called Taking Responsibility for Ourselves. And what I actually point out there is a religious outlook tends to confuse the question of how and why we're responsible for ourselves and what we're not responsible for, because it injects God into the picture and it makes it more difficult to think about our own responsibility.
Okay, let's do it more practically, because I actually agree with everything you just said, and that's contained in Ronald Aronson's book, Living Without God. My wallet's there. There are 20, 30 people are going to go by. You could just take the money out of it, and I would have no idea that you would do it. But you don't, the Ten Commandments, don't believe are divinely generated. So what's to stop you from committing the perfect crime of stealing from me?
Well, if you see yourself as this isolated integer, it has nothing to do with anybody else. You're a total consumer. You don't have any obligations. Go ahead, steal. The problem is you're completely intellectually and emotionally messed up with that worldview, because what you don't see is that you're part of a wider world. You're part of a world in which you are there with other people, not just practically. That is to say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, which, by the way, you don't need God for. But that's one of the most practical statements you could ever have. But morally in the sense that you're a social being. You're not just an individual being.
And empathetic.
That's part of it.
That I know how you would feel. You know, I was putting it off on you, your choices, that you would know how you would feel if someone unbeknownst to you stole from you.
Exactly. You're breaking some sort of human fabric that you live in an everyday way, from which you draw nurture, you draw your culture, you draw your values. And so you say to yourself, well, this fabric is fine for me, except over here I'm going to rip someone off. That's living in total contradiction with yourself.
Yeah, and you mentioned what's called in this culture the golden rule, and almost every culture has that embedded, because if no, for no other reason, it makes common sense. Because, and I don't know if this is a good time to bring in Jean-Paul Sartre, who you've written about and are considered the foremost English language scholar on the French philosopher, that when you choose, you're choosing universally, right?
That's right. That's right.
That's existentialism. And if someone said to me, if you want to put an ism on what I live, nowhere near, and I'm nowhere near knowing, you know, the extent that you do, and you've made part of existential philosophy your life's work, that's what I would adhere my beliefs to, is that when you choose, each act you choose is extraordinarily important, because it sets really the context for a universal choice.
Right. That's part of it. The other part, interestingly enough, is presupposed in what you said, namely that you choose, that we are shaped by all sorts of forces beyond ourselves. We are controlled by society. We are sometimes oppressed, sometimes exploited, sometimes privileged. But despite all that, in the end, we do and can choose.
Now, as we've been, one of the themes, as we've been talking about your book, Living Without God, is the status of non-believers, of free thinkers, of atheists and agnostics and secularists in this society. And yet there is just sort of now a modicum of respectability. And it is the emergence of books like yours and by others, and the Bill Maher movie, that probably none of this would have been possible 10 years ago. Do you think that's true?
Oh, that's absolutely right. I think the situation got so bad that it had to get better. Because if you go back more than 10 years ago, if you go back 40 years ago, plus a couple of years, Time magazine had this, in April 1966, an issue with a black cover with a red border around it with, in bright red letters, "Is God dead?" So about 40 years ago, you'll also remember, and your listeners will remember, the song that's in all of our heads, by John Lennon, Imagine. And it, It's imagining a world without religion.
Isn't that an amazing song that's so popular that it says, imagine, you know, only us here? And people obviously know the words, not buried beneath some, you know, metal band.
Right. Number one, imagine everyone living for today.
And our friends, I think I could say that in the plural here, in the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org, they have put up billboards across the country that say, imagine no religion, and creating controversy everywhere.
Yes, well, we've gone to your earlier question about the sort of, it's really the vicissitudes of religion and secularism in American history. One of the things you can see if you go back to the founding fathers, is there has been a conflict over secularism versus religion for much of American history. And the conflict has taken on new forms today. And as I say, things had to get worse over the past generation before now some very sharp, very angry, and I think appropriately angry writers have said enough of religion in our face.
Well, we only have about a minute or so. Talk about time flying by. The subject that I'm very interested in, like a parting word to religionists. They're probably going to get some email. How dare you have this on Sunday, and you're insulting a good part of your audience. But what do you say to them?
I say to them, we need to talk. And I say that as, in my own case, an atheist, someone who is not a believer in any way, shape, or form. But we need to see where we agree, where we disagree, what we have in common. As Obama says, we need to find common ground. And one of the reasons is because both believers and unbelievers face really the same enemy in this society today. And it's fundamentalists who want to tell us all what to believe and how to believe, and we really have to join together to deal with that enemy.
20 seconds for the atheists and agnostics in the audience. What would you say to them?
Read my book, and we need to gain confidence. We need to talk about what we do believe positively.
Randall Ahrens has been my guest on the Peter Werby Show. The book is Living Without God, New Directions for Atheists, Agnostics, Secularists, and the Undecided. It's published by Counterpoint. You can go to counterpointpress.com. It'll also be available at peterwerby.com, the information. And Christopher Hitchens himself says, Randall Ahrens demonstrates that atheism represents much more than what one does not believe, that it is the precondition for just humanism. The two closing chapters are models of Stoicism at its best. Randall Ahrens, thanks for the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. Views expressed on the program not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Looking out there!
The Butcher's Podcast, live.
The special YouTube can't get anything at all.
WRIF.com.
I
said, what's that? Or check us out at myspace.com/WRIF.
Guaranteed.
You can always eat more. And we won't be naked.
Does anyone else smell Astroglide?
101.
WRIF.
People are stupid, clever, and always say some fucked up like commercial break.
Everything that rocks.
How would you like to lose weight for free? Hi, I'm Steve Bostick for Right Size Smoothies.
And I'm Scott Johnson. For a few months now, we've offered an incredible deal to the public. Use Right Size Free for 2 full weeks and see how much weight you can lose before you pay for them.
But some of you haven't called, so we're offering one last chance to take advantage of this popular offer. These people call.
I lost weight within a couple days. Now I'm down 120 pounds.
A free trial sounded like a no-brainer, so I called. Within the first week, I'd lost a lot of weight.
I knew within a few days I'd finally found the answer. I've lost 44 pounds.
Right Size Smoothies contain an appetite manager that knocks out hunger cold. You'll see results early, so you'll know you can do it.
How much weight can you lose in 2 weeks? Try Right Size Free and find out. You could be our next testimonial.
For your free 2-week trial, call 1-800-644-1381. 1-800-644-1381. 1-800-644-1381.
Attention. Cetrexa is currently seeking participants with stretch marks. If you have stretch marks due to weight gain, pregnancy, even bodybuilding, you are eligible to try Cetrexa free. Cetrexa was introduced to improve skin and has now been shown to dramatically reduce the size and depth of stretch marks on any area of the body. It effectively fades even very dark stretch marks as it repairs the damage in. To participate in Celtrix trial and see results risk-free, call 1-800-962-1055. Stretch marks can mar and damage the skin, making the body look unattractive. But right now, you can join the thousands of people who have seen stretch marks diminish and fade, watched as ugly zipper-like marks began to repair themselves. Participate in free trial calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of your stretch marks, you are eligible to participate and experience a free trial of Celtrixa. For your free trial, call this number today. 1-800-962-1055. 1-800-962-1055. 1-800-962-1055.
Tickets for Metallica, January 30th to the show. Tickets for one set list for the show, signed by the entire band.
Listen for your chance to win and get more details now at WRF.com.
No.
There's nothing pure in this world, and there's something left in this world.